This is HPR episode 1963 entitled, HPR New Year's Show Episode 3. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 179 minutes long. The summary is, Dyson Sphere, Star Wars, Spammers, Tizen, Kevi, TV, Security, Single Board PC in general.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by AnHonestHost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
And I'm jumping the gun a little here, but while we've got a interlude, we're coming up on to 1 a.m. Zulu, and greetings to Cape Verde, some regions of Greenland, and I don't know why all these things say one more. We need to go in. We said that last year. We were going to go in and find out who one more was. Preye, I'm destroying these. Ponta Delgada in the Azores. That's got somebody must have hit the keys or something. If I cannot pronounce what that is, and Mindelo.
Okay, happy new year to Matt. And what I find interesting actually is somebody from the UK to go with this time thing is there actually is a few places behind the UK an hour, which you just mentioned. We don't normally think of that. And also in the summer, when we've got British summer time, Iceland is actually an hour. It's like you go to Iceland, you actually go back an hour just because of the time zone, which I think is interesting as well.
Oh, that never occurred to me, at least in the southern hemisphere. If they do, daylight savings time, then they would be on a different clock.
Yeah. There was that as well. That's the third thing. But what I was saying is, Britain or the UK goes to summertime, so you go an hour ahead. But Iceland does not ever change its clocks, so when it's summertime here, they went there, okay, it's 2016 here now, so I went in 2014 in May. We have to go back now just because of the time zone, which I thought was a bit interesting. But also what I think is interesting actually as well is how, because of the whole daylight savings time thing, if you're in New Zealand, or I think it was American Samoa, wasn't it? That decided that they were really last time zone, very last, so they became the first, even for New Zealand. So the whole 24-hour day thing doesn't really apply at this time of year, because all the daylight savings was 26. Well, we did the whole New Year's show within 26 hours before as well on this, so.
Yeah, and this is going to be way far afield, but it just occurred to me the other day. If Game of Thrones actually takes place on a Dyson Sphere, as it seems to in the beginning sequence, which probably has nothing to do with it, if you had assuming they are orbiting an artificial sun, because if it was a real sun, it would never go dark anywhere. But if they're orbiting an artificial sun that gets turned on and off at night, then every place in Game of Thrones would have the same time zone.
Oh, right. Yeah, Game of Thrones, to be honest, I only really saw the first series, and that was a few years back when they decided to show it on the Sky One channel here, trying to get people to go on Sky Atlantic, I assume. A bit like how it actually shows football on some of the main football around here on Sky One on occasion. I just get people in Sky Sports, but that's what they do, yeah. But I should catch up on Game of Thrones, because there are DVDs around there.
50, is that, like, actually some kind of theory that, like, they're in a Dyson Sphere? I thought the beginning was just supposed to look cool. I didn't know that that was like an actual thing.
I've heard that advanced before. It's some sort, you know, and it doesn't look big enough to be an actual planet. You know, of course, we're only seeing what, you know, their known world, I guess. But that has been suggested. But like I said, I think that was completely a construct of the people doing the TV series, and not we need somebody in here who's actually read the books to maybe see if that has it. But you know, if you look at it, what they show up in the sky sure does look like some sort of artificial sun as well. You know, it all looks the whole thing mechanical and clockwork.
I have read the books, right, and I've only seen like the first two seasons as well. The clockwork, that's what it's meant to be. It's basically clockwork. The whole point of the game is it's different powerful houses all trying to manipulate each other. It's a big game. They're all trying to manipulate each other and capture land and capture allegiance and take this castle from such and such and get such and such to bend the knee and bring your forces to mine. And that's all it is. It's a big game. It's a big game of clockwork moving parts. That's the point of the intro sequence, is it's just lots of moving parts that are all interconnected. If you capture such and such a person, you've removed their princeling or something like that from the board. You're going to force them to do what you want and then get allegiance for another one. But if you capture them and if you accidentally kill them, then if they're allied with the younger son of such and such or the heir of the throne for such and such, and that's what it is. It's basically a number of families all trying to play each other for the Iron Throne. And it's just like clockwork. It's a game. That's what the intro sequence is.
And probably a lot like the real world, they show that, you know, no matter what happens in all these wars and stuff that the peon type people keep dying in, things for them aren't going to change no matter who's running it.
Exactly. Because the only thing that matters in these is the high bottoms. There's all the lords and the ladies and the barons. I don't know if there's barons, actually. It's those people. And that was why, initially, when I was reading the books, I found them quite hard to actually read, because I'm essentially a Republican, not in the American sense, but I'm a Republican. So I find all this bowing and scraping to lords and ladies and all that kind of stuff, I just find that repulsive. And it's also why I struggled to read Lord of the Rings as well, because that whole world was very deferential to kings and queens and lords and all that kind of stuff. And for the same reason, I found that quite hard to get into as well.
Well, so was the real world.
Well, true, but we've at least got enough kind of democracies. Or systems that don't rely on absolute monarchies, so that you can kind of exist on some plane and still do different things and let these people exist on theirs. And, you know, just kind of never the twain may meet, you know. What I did find interesting about the Game of Thrones the TV series, from what I've seen, I've only seen season one and two. So far, but it is very, very accurate to the books. I mean, I was stunned how accurate it was to the books, and that made me think, oh, actually, there's some other stuff that's coming up later on in the books. Like, I've seen clips of season 5, and I'm like, oh, I know what that is. Just by that wee clip, I know exactly what that is because I've read it. I don't know what book it was in, but I've read it. I know what happens with that character, so I can picture that now. And it looks like, I don't see that, they've kept very close to the books for seasons 1 and 2. I've got to assume that they'll be keeping quite close to the books for the other seasons that I haven't seen yet. It's good. It is very good, Game of Thrones, I have to say, it is very good.
Why have you only seen season 1 and 2?
Because I caught up with the box sets later on, and then it was removed for the box sets, and I'm waiting until March or something it comes back.
I think the TV producers are hoping George R. Martin will suddenly have a incredible burst of speed writing, because I'd understood they were about to catch up with the last book he's written.
My understanding, having not read the books and just watched the TV show, is that the show has run out of books. So at this point, and the further along it has gone, it has diverged further and further from the books, to where the author has told the showrunners what the ending is. But basically from this point on, they're going to do it their way and he's going to do it his way. And they'll end up at the same place, but how they get there may be a little different.
Star Wars ran out of books as well, but here are new films that we already had the Star Wars discussion anyway. So,
yeah, I think offhand that was one of those things where I was watching like two or three different shows, like one episode at a time, kind of gradually working through them. And then I happened to stumble across the newsroom, and then everything was thrown out the window. And it's like, it just consumed me. And then everything was burned at that point. I've got to go back and start getting into things. And then, of course, a big Star Wars thing came on to Sky Movies, where the Clone Wars, every season of the Clone Wars is in it there, and every season of Rebels, or both seasons of Rebels is in there. So I've been going back through them, and everything's sort of thrown aside for that before I'm getting back into other stuff. And there's only enough hours in the day.
You know, I haven't watched Clone Wars other than a little bit. And I've watched all of Rebels, I think, up to this point. It starts off really rough, but it is really good by the, like, where they're at now. Like, it's remarkably good. I was actually surprised.
Is there any legitimate way to stream Rebels anywhere? I haven't seen it yet at all.
I get it through my cable. We just use our cable login to go to the Disney site and watch it there. So I know that's a legitimate way of doing it.
Well, that's kind of what I meant. I even when I had cable in town, that was one of the services I didn't get. So it's coming around. Of course, I've mentioned on Linux Lugcast, you've got both Showtime through Hulu, and actually you can get Showtime through Amazon Prime now as well for about the same price. And I looked at my old Showtime app I had from when I had cable, and you know, the they're not showing all the movies that are on Showtime, the channel on quote Showtime on Hulu. I may switch to Prime and see if it's different. But you know, of course, then you've got HBO, which is completely a la carte, its own internet service, and Stars is now on Amazon Prime for like $9 a month. I think the only thing on there that I would really be jonesing for is the Evil Dead series. There's other things I would watch, like Scottish Lady Going Back in Time series, but I think that's more of a chick deal. And I don't want to offend anybody saying that, but I do think that series obviously is written, for a strong female lead for the ladies to watch, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's other stuff on Stars I wouldn't mind, but I'm not, for one series, I'm not going to pay $9 a month yet. So, and that's a lot of things like the Disney. Well, you got kids, Taj. Of course, you're probably watching Disney all the time anyway. But, just for one thing, I'm not going to subscribe to service. But the point I'm getting to, I bet within a year or 2 years on the outside, we'll be able to get everything, be able to subscribe to every premium service through the internet that you can get on a cable subscription. It's obvious the rats are leaving the ship.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I've seen the first eight or so episodes of Rebels. Doesn't quite grab me yet. I don't know why. Maybe it's the characters that are just a bit too annoying. I don't know. I have seen bits and pieces ahead. Like, I think at one point it was Ahsoka turned up. And I was like, oh, cool. I forgot all about her. The last I knew from her for the Clone Wars was I liked Ahsoka, and then she was on the run and run out of the Order for murder and things like that. And I was like, what happened to her? She was one of the big the main characters in the Clone Wars. What happened to her? And then she turns up like 10 years down the line as a grown woman now, sort of in as a rebel contract. And then that to me is interesting in the Clone Wars, where I'm looking at what happened to the big name characters from the Clone Wars. I mean, we saw what happened to Grievous, to Dooku, to Sidious, to Kenobi, to Skywalker, to all these characters. But the ones I'm thinking, like, what happened to Asajj Ventress? How did she die? I don't remember ever seeing anything where she actually died. I know Dooku turned on her and then she went back to Dathomir, but she never actually died. So it's one of those things where the big characters from the big war, like 10, 15 years beforehand, do they turn up in the Clone War, like in Rebels, like Ahsoka does?
I thought Ahsoka died. I never saw the episodes from the very, very end of Clone Wars, but I thought Ahsoka died in the last season.
Well, I'm on to the end of season 5 now, and that's the point where, again, I'm binge watching this, so that's the point where she is. I've watched most of these before, but this was round about the point where I've lost track of it, so I'm kind of getting to the new stuff now, or the stuff that I haven't seen before. And I don't remember, I've certainly not seen Ahsoka being dying in the Clone Wars, but she definitely turns up in Rebels. And there's one point in Rebels, I've seen it on YouTube, I've not seen the episode yet, where there's some part of it where she realizes that Anakin, or that Vader, is her old master.
Yeah, having not seen Clone Wars and not really knowing who the character was until she showed up and like read about her and she was in Clone Wars, she did not die. She's alive and well in Rebels, and she's kind of a main character in the second season. She's not in every episode, but she's kind of their connection to the like rebellion proper. She sort of gives them their missions almost. She's kind of like their commander, which is kind of cool.
Okay, maybe it was something like they ran a plot line where they thought she was dead or something and she turns back up. I don't know.
Yes, I remember in Rebels, there was 3 or 4 episodes where they're kind of sneakily talking to someone, but you never see who it is, you never hear who it is, and she's got some code name or something. And then one of the episodes, she turns up, and that's the person that Kanan has been talking to. And it's like, oh, it's Ahsoka. So she survived then. Excellent, she survived. But of course, at that point in time, she can't show that she's a Jedi, because as soon as she brings the lightsaber out, then she's identified as a Jedi, and the Jedi are the blame for the war and all that kind of stuff.
And I also thought, maybe it's another one of her race, but I thought they killed her off in one of the missions of Battlefront as well. Battlefront 2, rather. You know, there's a point in that where they show the clone troopers and after they've been ordered to turn on the Jedi.
There is another Togruta on the council at some point, so it could have been her. I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right there, because it shows a adult in that mission.
Yeah, there is definitely another Togruta, an adult Togruta woman on the council. She's not there that much, but yeah, she is sort of on and off. So it's probably her that you see. Yeah, I was thinking as well that, you know, that feeling that if you only ever watch the movies, you get that kind of feeling. See in episode 2 when Yoda comes in and he just ignites his lightsaber against Dooku. And if the only thing you watch is the movies, then you've got that kind of the heartbeat racing moments. Yes, finally we're getting some getting a real master of a lightsaber. It's actually going to be fantastic. And that I've realized that kind of feeling is if you're into the expanded universe, the Clone Wars kind of gives you that kind of thing as well. Whereby, you know, I mean, for me, it's Luminara Unduli. As soon as she turns up, she is one of the best lightsaber duelists in the order. So is Kit Fisto. And Kit Fisto gets a really shoddy deal in episode 3. He really does. But you actually see them properly in action. It gives me that same kind of thing. It's like, yes, finally we're getting to see a master with a lightsaber. Yeah, I don't care what people say. I think Kit Fisto did get a raw deal in episode 3. He's meant to be one of the best sword fighters in the order. And do you know who Kit Fisto is in episode 3?
It's been a while since I've watched the prequels.
Right, Kit Fisto. Remember the 4 Jedi that go to arrest the Chancellor? Mace Windu and 3 other masters?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right, he's one of them. He's the Nautilin with the green sort of head tails. So when Sidious is like treason then, and jumps into the four of them, takes a couple of swipes and takes two of the masters out without even a blink of an eye. So it's him, it's Mace Windu and Kit Fisto that's left. Kit Fisto manages to get like a couple of blocks, and then he's taken care of, and then it's just Sidious and Mace Windu. And I was like, really? I mean, seriously? He's meant to be one of the best fighters in the Order. And it was taken out by like a couple of swipes, like seriously. He was so, that I just felt for Kit Fisto, was like, he was so wrong. He was so wrong. He did get a part in episode two as well. He was the one that, in the middle of the battle on Geonosis, he was the one that force pushed 3PO onto his back, and then he lost his head and stuff like that. Yeah, that was Kit Fisto as well. But at least he was actually fighting then. At least he was in the thick of it. But going out like that to Sidious, that was just poor. That was so shoddy.
Well, I mean, you watch the movie, and how do any of them keep up with Yoda? Because he's just like a ping pong ball with a lightsaber.
Yeah, true. The thing is, I mean, Yoda's one of these kind of guys that he kind of completely nullifies all your options, because your only option is go low. Because if you go even mid, you're not going to hit him. So you've got to keep going low. But it doesn't nullify his attack. He can go low, mid, or high. And sort of jumping around at the same time. So, it kind of narrows down your options when you're fighting him.
I mean, I would think Yoda, even against General Grievous would be like, oh, holy shit, you know?
Well, in the Revenge of the Sith novel, the reason why Kenobi is sent to Grievous is that Kenobi has no style. He's just one of these guys that's able to, one of these Jedi that's able to just relax and be formless and let the Force control him. Whereas everyone else in the Order has a style. Even Yoda has a style. They've all got styles that are developed to sort of maximize their strengths and to minimize their weaknesses and all that. And Grievous learns these styles very, very quickly. Once he starts fighting them, he learns these styles very, very quickly, and he can adapt. So if you've got a style, if you're any of the Jedi that have got a style, Grievous, all he needs to do is hold out long enough to figure you out, and then he's nailed you. Whereas Kenobi has no style. That's why he was sent.
And welcome to the channel, Zyska, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Well, on that note, that's 25 past one, and I'm struggling to keep my eyes open here. So I shall bid you all adieu. It's been wonderful. And so happy new year to all, one and all. And yeah, and I shall catch you some other time.
Davis Webb, you're always welcome to come on the, and always entertaining on the Hack Republic Radio New Year's show.
I was just going to say, I just noticed Kevy coming up. So before I go, good evening. Happy New Year, Kevy.
And a Happy New Year. Give me 2 seconds. The sound settings are not right. Everyone sounds a bit distorted.
Yeah, we're all doing the Vader impressions here. You're missing your equalizer's missing out the heavy breathing.
Give me a sec here. Keep talking. That's sense. Snoring, not talking. Or Darth Vader's breathing.
That's Darth Vader trying to suck his dinner through a straw. That's what that is.
How are you anyway, Gordon? Good to see you.
What, you can see me? Damn it,
I can see you right there.
I'm all right, actually. I was just on my way out, and then I saw you come into the channel. I thought, oh, I'll just hang around for a few more minutes. So say hello. I'm all right. Aye, how are you?
Aye, well, no bad at all. No complaints.
Well,
kept on the go.
Oh, Kevy's here. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I heard my name there. Who said it?
Yeah, we'll need to get back together and mumble on a wee chat about Crivens and that, and sometime in the new year. I meant to reply to your email, and then I thought I'd done it, and then it turns out I hadn't done it. So I will get around to that, and I'll bring you up to date in a few days, I guess, maybe even tomorrow. I'll do that email, and then we'll need to get together for a wee chat on Mumble and see where we're going with that. So aye.
Aye, very good. I'm just actually glad you're okay, because I hadn't heard anything from you. I was like, no. He's even concerned on Twitter. Something's wrong. But no, it was Caroline that said to me you were okay.
Because she had emailed at the same, well, around about the same kind of day as you had. I've just went kind of dark for a while. I'll explain. But yeah, I just kind of lost interest in a lot of stuff, really. So, but yeah, I don't know how to bring anything else down. So anyway, and I was going to leave just before you turned up. I was just saying my goodbyes, and then I saw you coming in. And thought, I'll stick it in for a few minutes, but I really should be going. So that's now almost 1:30, and I really should be going. So I shall.
That's terrible. Have you got a party to go to? The night is young.
Yeah, well, you never know. It's young for some people. Hey, it's 1:30 in the afternoon in Australia. Not that I'm there, but yeah. So I'm going to go. I bid you all Happy New Year again, and catch you another time.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Robin.
Right, I'm going to log off and log back on, because my sound is all over. So you all sound really distorted. So I'm going to try logging off, log back on. See.
Well, for what it's worth, you sound...
You sound okay, actually, Kevin. Oh, he's gone already, isn't he?
Yeah. Do we sound any better now?
Can I call that in?
Oh, perfect. That's better. Don't know what the difference was, but it sounded really just wobbly and distorted. I was thinking, I couldn't make out what people are saying, but it was just kind of odd to...
We are.
Yeah, that's what makes the hacker community so good. You are all actually great to listen.
It's my first time here, actually.
This is the first time I've made the New Year episode, but it's only because it's the first time in a few years I've actually been at home from the New Year episode. You know, when you're going visiting somebody, you can't really start saying, oh, well, thanks for having me, but see you later. I'm off to join the HBR guys.
Yeah, that's very much true. So, Kevin, you and... I don't know, you might remember my nick or recognise it.
Seb on the old Identica.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's the first time I've ever spoken to you. As far as voice, actually, because I remember I've obviously spoken to you over Dents and that, but...
Yeah, first time on a podcast, anyway. It was always just on Identica here and there.
So where are you?
And then I was going to... Where do you know? I was changed the status now, and then you... left there were people and I was always thinking, oh, maybe I should sign up on a thing like Identica. I can't remember what they're called now. Site. But I did I met Mac Mallow in person now, actually. He went on your podcast, I think, as well, didn't he? He's one of the Scottish guys.
Yes, yes, I met up with him quite a few times. In fact, the last time I was down in Glasgow, I stayed at his place.
No, I went to know us at the event, so at the only Linux event, it's probably worth going to in the UK, because there aren't many anyway. So I met up with him there. It's kind of funny, because some people were trying to figure out who I was and stuff.
What? Are you on Twitter?
No, I didn't really bother with social networking sites anymore.
Oh, okay, we had somebody who...
It
was just like a nickname on Twitter, and they came up to McNally and says, oh, hello, I'm so-and-so on a dog camp. And I was wondering if it was yourself, but no, it wasn't if you're not on Twitter.
No, I saw that before as well, because when I got Twitter years ago, there was like somebody with that name on it. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to have to call myself something else then.
Oh, well, I must admit, there's actually a good community just now on GNU Social. I'm on FragDev. Some people are on Quitter. The big difference is FragDev looks like old Identica. Quitter looks like Twitter, but it's also got a limit. It's got quite a short limit. I think it's 300 characters, whereas FragDev has about 1,000 limit characters. I've yet to actually go over the 1,000 characters.
yeah, that's right. FragDev, and there was a Swedish site as well. I was really looking for the... After your old camp stuff, because there's always something that goes online, and then I was like, oh yeah, status, that alternative sites. Maybe I should sign up and I could chat to somebody I chatted to at the event, but then it's like, nah, I've got other things to do, really. But saying that, one of the guy from, it's kind of funny, because at old camp, last year now, 2015, because he's coming in the air. The guy who won the main prize, the big the computer from the intro where...
paranoid as he is on Flag Dib.
Yeah, but I was chatting to him just before the raffle, and I was like, are you, yeah, okay, and no, it sounds as a joke. And if you win the, if you win the prize, if you win it, you can give it to me. So he's like, why would I give it to you? And then a raffle happens, and somebody had a ticket called out, but they weren't there, so they redrawed it, and yeah, he won it. And of course, it was kind of funny, in a way, after a little joke with him before the raffle.
Right, I don't know if this happened to MDS, but you're really breaking up here.
He's breaking up, maybe.
You are breaking up. I missed pretty much the last end of that story.
Okay, I just said I was joking with the person who won the prize, and he was one of the HPR people. Just before the battle, I was joking about if he'd won it, and he actually won it. That was it, really.
Yeah, I met up with Dave at the last... Glasgow Podcrawl. It was good to meet up with him, actually, because I'd only spoke to him briefly before that. So it was actually, I met up with, there was, obviously it was myself and McNally, but there was also Dave Morris and Andrew Gregory as well. So it was a good night.
Yeah, McNally was all right. He was like, oh yeah, I remember you from a podcast I listened to. And then he went on to the, and he became a guest on the Linux Voice podcast that they did at the event as well.
Yeah, I gave him a real stick for that, because he mentioned Linux, the Linux Voice podcast like four times in their own podcast. And I said, flip and went on that podcast, you didn't mention our wee podcast even once. So I was just joking, obviously, but I really did give him stick for that.
Oh, yeah. Tux Jam or something else now, I don't know.
That's right, yeah, Tux Jam, yeah.
Yeah, I used to always try and listen to Craig Wins enough, like, all the time, and Tux Jam as well. But the thing with podcasts is, you know, if you listen to it properly, there's apparently a 2-second make it faster thing, but if you listen to it properly, then yeah, it takes hours and hours and hours. And also, the second you start doing something else, or enough of something else, you miss half the conversation. And I definitely prefer listening to music on the computer if I'm listening to things anyway, so I've kind of gone off listening to podcasts.
Well, there's the key thing. Don't listen to any, don't do anything else while you listen to Tux Jam.
Oh, I'm fine.
So, what's anybody else enjoying this New Year's night?
Not much. This seems to be the extent of it.
Anybody enjoying a nice dram or a nice beer or a nice wine or anything?
No, I'm on my second or third beer here.
Oh, well, I'm just having one or two Dalmore whiskeys, just to be social. No, I bought a nice dram for New Year. I thought,
I got a two-month-old at home, so if he wakes up, then, you know, it's going to be a rough night if I have a couple of beers on me.
I remember the first and the last time I was rough as a dad, especially when my kid was young. My first New Year with him, I was over at my neighbor's house for a party. I got back at half for something like that, and my kid was up. It was rough all day. He was only 2 months. Rough all day.
Yeah, I think I made that mistake once, and you know, where I just basically had too much with dinner or something like that, and my kid, I think it was probably with my daughter when she was really younger, just kept me up most of the night, because she was one who had a hard time putting her down. Like, I'm not sure whether just had something like in her ear or something like that, but every time we put it later down into her crib, she would just start screaming like crazy. So we had a lot of long nights of walking with her. I made the mistake of drinking too much on a night that she was really rough, and never again. Horrible, horrible night that was.
Oh yeah, you only do that once. You really do learn your... I was pretty much very dry after that. If it was maximum, that was it.
Right. I can't hear again. So, my phone was going off, so I was like, oh. Because we changed the number, so if they only call, then it's probably somebody who actually wants to get hold of you. Not these marketing calls, which is a shame to some extent, because I'm in a public speaking group as well, and I've been meaning to do one about the Microsoft scam call, where they phone up and they say they're from the Microsoft support, and they basically try and trick you to either give you them your credit card number or to remote connect your computer and all the rest of it. And I mean, there's YouTube videos of this, sure, but I've had some before and really had them on there a long time. I mean, I got sore on that once because it was doing it so well, pretending that my computer was all virused and blue screen of death and all the rest of it, you know. And I want to do like a speech about this kind of call with the kind of jokey stuff, all of like stuff, and then a bit about the serious side. And I'm thinking maybe with some voice clips or something, I don't know, but because I need to get a speech done, another one done at this group I'm in, and it would be, could be an interesting thing to do at that. But I'm a bit like, because I can't do a call in 7 minutes, but I can do give people an idea what it's like and why it is actually funny to be the scammer, if you know about computers, I guess.
Seb, can you do me a favor? Yeah. Can you turn your turn your gain down a little bit, or just move the mic back just a little bit, because it's kind of over-modulating.
Who, Kevin or me?
You.
What do you want me to turn down? The mic?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I can try.
Either that or just kind of move the mic a little bit away. It's just, it's coming over very, very loud, and it's very distorted.
Just out of curiosity, what is my levels like?
Sounds pretty darn good.
Right, no, that's fine, because I've just literally just built up a new computer, and I've got I've just put Debian on it, but obviously I haven't had a chance to tweak it properly. I was playing about with the other night for Tux Jam, so I was making sure. I'm always weird because I like to record my own voice and mumble, then play it back and think, oh, how does that go?
Yeah, I think the problem is Seb's not using a headset at all earlier, so there is he started out with a little bit of feedback, but Seb, whatever you were doing at the beginning, go back to doing that, because the feedback loop has got progressively worse.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. Is this a public month?
Happy New Year.
Open. Oh, wow. Okay. Hello. Wasn't
sure. I'm finding you very low. Can you maybe turn up the volume a wee bit on your mic?
Absolutely. I'm actually got to disconnect on Bluetooth.
Oh, it sounds like you're in your car.
Well, one thing's for sure. You've not got an Ubuntu phone, then, if you're on Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah? That's not working?
Oh, no. Oh, no. It really is not working at all. Well, to be fair, they've done some stuff. I can now connect to my Bluetooth speakers. But the Bluetooth headsets, they'll connect, but as soon as you try to use them, it just basically, it's like all connection just, now, I mean, I know that there's nothing wrong with the Bluetooth headset because they work with the Android devices, but I just love being a guinea pig. I put myself through this pain. I got the BQ-E5 and sold off my Android headset. So of course I went into it thinking, right, let's force myself to use Ubuntu. And for the most, actually, it's actually quite usable, but you miss a lot of things. But the one thing that's not usable is I cannot use it in the car because the Bluetooth headset just won't work.
Yeah, Zyska, just so you know, you asked what a server this was. It is. Yeah, everybody's more than welcome to join. This is our New Year's celebration for hackerpublicradio.org, but you should know this is going to be rebroadcast as a podcast on the hackerpublicradio.org website.
I don't know if this sounds better or not, but can we just say you bought one of the Ubuntu phones, the BQ-E45, yeah?
No, the BQ-E5.
The slightly newer one, yeah?
Yeah.
Sadly, I actually was one of the first people with the, well, I said earlier on here, but the first people with the BQ-E4.5 to get one, full commercial available phone, all that, yeah. That's a Bentley phone. But I was also then one of the first people, if not the first, to actually lose that phone, because I've been travelling in the summer, I've been Sweden, I've come back, travel tiredness, all the rest of it, and then basically end up leaving it on the house drive without realising it at 5 a.m. until much later, and then it's gone. But so that was a bit annoying. But I've got the Meizu phone as well, which is pretty nice, one of Bentley phone. Such a little second iPhone, and they sent me the wrong color. It should have been gold, not silver.
Oh, well, I had a look at the 4.5 because I got sent to the invite for that to go for it first. But when I looked at the specs, I was there going, nah, just too low. And then when the E5 came out, I thought, yeah, okay, I'm willing to pay that for the extra. I mean, it was only like a 20 euro difference or something. It wasn't like, it was a reasonable amount of spec upgrade. Yeah, I'll go for it.
So, yeah, they need the same, the 4.5 and the HD one. They're pretty much the same phone. But a lot of people debate, actually, if people can run this as their main phone or not. An Ubuntu phone, I mean, if you can really run it as your main phone for months. And you know what? I've been doing exactly just that. First with that BQ1 I lost, and then the Meizu. But I could do it because I'm not actually running loads and loads of different Android apps and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's fine. It does calls, it does texts, I can go on web pages, it's fine in that sense. Nice interface, nice operating system, and it'll be interesting when the actual convergence comes as well.
Yeah, well, I've been doing the same. I mean, I've had it as my only phone since the beginning of July, so I really went into the deep end, but that was my own choice. You know, I mean, I decided, come it be it really awful or be it great, it's going to be my phone just to try it. Because I always thought I can always go back and like have a Huawei for relatively cheap if it's another disaster. But thankfully, no, it hasn't been. There's been obviously some things I miss. But as far as I'm concerned, it is actually, if you're not into apps, it's great. If you're heavily into apps, like if you have to have WhatsApp, you have to have Skype, you have to have, obviously it's no use whatever. But as far
well, yeah, if you want all the apps, if you want to have this and that Android app, then, well, sure, Ubuntu Touch is definitely not it at this stage. However, the YOLO or YOLO phone, on the other hand, which is, again, Linux-based, sat by former Nokia people, it runs BTFS even as its file system, it's got Wayland as the graphics, and they've got an Android compatibility layer, and the first thing I got one of those as well, so pretty much the first thing I did is I put loads and loads of Android apps on there, and it worked really well. And then I thought, okay, I need to actually try some of the native apps. So I bought that sort of December 2014 with the YOLO tablet, which I've not got because I've got some fun investor issues at the moment, or whatever it was. But I got the phone anyway. I put those Android apps on. I know all the people in IOCs that told me, right, you need to upgrade the Zelophys OS on this phone because the ship version is really old. So I was like, yeah, but I've only just got this phone. I haven't done anything with the operating system, so I'm just going to do my thing. And so when I actually corrupted the phone, because I put all these Android apps on, fine, it worked great. But the second I tried to put a native app on, actually made for this YOLO phone or Zelophys OS, it actually basically broke my phone. It became black, it became unusable. And the reason for that is quite simply because the ship version was so old on the phone by default, that the version of Qt, or Qt as some people say, it's called Qt actually, what KDE runs as well, it was so old, the ship version, that my apps just did not work. It basically corrupted the whole operating system just because the apps were made for a later version of Qt, which was a little bit annoying, but I was only playing around, so no big deal. But that's the debate as well, if the Ubuntu phone or Ubuntu Touch should also have an Android compatibility layer, because I mean, Titan does it from Samsung, and in a way they should do it, and on the other hand they shouldn't.
Well, I just want to chime in earlier, Seb. I heard you talking about the Indian tech scammers, how you were looking to... Yeah, it also happens that I've trolled them quite a bit, and I also have an acquaintance who has compromised several of their sites and also managed to write a VoIP script that would war dial them and play back a robot that would talk to them with pre-recorded clips. So I thought you might find him interesting.
That sounds great. That sounds like the feel-good message of the year.
he has a lot of recordings of the Indians getting very frustrated because they keep getting these callbacks and they can't disconnect the phone. So.
Wait, he's got recordings of the scam?
I'm sure he does.
Say that again, who?
I can give you his contact information if you'd like.
Yeah, because I'm seriously going to do a speech of some sort about this, and I need some kind of content or something I could use because people aren't going to understand otherwise. You know, these are people who don't know what blue screen of death is. I'm talking about average people here.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd find it very interesting.
It was funny, one of my mates had one of them go totally mad on the phone. He obviously just hit a raw nerve with them. They had phoned up and he had led them on for a wee while, just to get them on the phone. He had led them on, wasn't. And then he sees the guy, he says, I've got to ask before we continue. And this really hit a raw nerve with the guy. He says, what does Ganesh think of what you're doing? I mean, you're clearly Indian. And the guy says, yes, I am Indian. He says, what does Ganesh think of what you're doing? Ganesh is peaceful. Ganesh is, you know, this, Ganesh is that. There is no way Ganesh would agree with you scamming elderly people and vulnerable people out of their money. And apparently the guy just lost it with him. He started shouting, swearing at him down the phone.
Yeah, it's not just the Indians. There's a lot of Nigerians who seem to participate in that as well.
It's actually quite funny, being a Linux user, you can actually really wind them up because you can play really dumb and, you know,
oh, absolutely.
You know, click on the Windows button. Oh, I don't know what that is. Where do you want me to click? You know, and of course, with a setup like mine, I'm using the Mate desktop. So if I click on the bottom left, it shows me my entire desktop. You know, it's like, oh, there's nothing like that here. And you can really wind them up.
Yeah, yes. If you play dumb well enough, you get sworn at on the phone. In the end, actually, that was good because I had first person, then they referred me to the other person, and then it'd been on for about an hour or so. I even got called back because I'd hanged up somewhere or something. And then they're probably thinking this computer is really having problems. How am I going to get what they want? So they start getting my credit card number. So at this stage, I'm not even thinking what credit card number or debit card number even looks like. So I started getting like 300, 400, 500, 600, and they were like, are you messing with me? And I was like, yeah, I know what you're doing. They're trying to scam people and so on. And this one swore at me, basically.
You can get credit card numbers for testing purposes from Visa and MasterCard, feed it to the scammers, and it usually passes through their system. And you can trick them into thinking it's a legitimate payment.
I don't know if anybody ever saw the blog post I was putting about this, but I thought this was great. We're going back maybe about, well, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, a wee while ago, but somebody had one of these calls, and it was one of those, you know, check and see how many viruses computer's running. So he thought, okay, I'll play on. So he fired up, according to his blog post, he fired up Windows in a virtual machine. But the problem was this guy was actually a pen tester, and he had just got a particularly nasty things to try out. So, but wait a minute here. So he led them on a wee while. He set up the VM, and then he saved these particularly aggressive viruses in a folder called bank passwords. And he then says, they were going on about how terrible this computer is infected and this and this and this. So please let us deal with this. Oh, okay, right. Yes. And we'll control your computer. And don't worry, you don't need to do anything. You go away. And he saved on the desktop as, you know, bank passwords or something like that. Something that's very, very... He says he watched the screen move about for the cursor move about a while. And then next thing he saw was a remote window pop up and then a right click on his folder, bank passwords, copy and paste. You're just really wishing there was a, and this is what happened next. But obviously that was where the video ended.
I've renamed the exes as .docs.
Oh, now that would have been a good idea.
It's sad really that happens, but for those it's because my ass always paid money or possibly
scammed.
No, get the scammy like that or try to in the first place. The scammers, not getting the scammers getting scammed, but them phoning people up. I mean, I remember one day where, yeah, he starts singing on the phone. I remember you can hear them ringing somebody else up in the background, so I mean. I remember there was one day actually where I hanged up and I said whatever, and I got phoned again about an hour later, all the same thing. And
it's unfortunate too, because behind, you know, caller ID spoofing or whatever, and telephony, they can really hide behind a wall of anonymity. It's hard to track them down sometimes.
Actually, one time, maybe it was the first time, I basically, you know, I just had one of these phone calls. I've never had it before. Probably had my, like, Ubuntu support hats long, so I mean, got some of that computer help to pat, you know, so I had this call and I was like, right, what you're doing is legal and sort of thing, you know. And then this guy was like, oh yeah, well, do you know where I live, sort of thing. But yeah, you can hide on the phone. It's true. That's what they do as well.
And I've noticed that a lot of times those workers are very reluctant about giving out information. They won't tell you anything about where they are, who they're working for, or nothing.
No, or they do this. I did the, like, where are you from thing once, and the guy was like, I'm calling you from 80 Victoria Street, London. Now, I thought this was a fake address to begin with, right? Like, you know, just whatever. But I've looked it up since, because like I said, I want to do a speech, etc. So apparently that's actually the Microsoft London office. I looked it up on Google and it came up with something, so it seems that they've got like a London office for Microsoft there, or in that road or whatever it is.
Well, it's like telling one of my customers the other day, he had a pop-up come up, didn't call back because I told him to reboot, so I guess it's a pop-up on a web page rather than an actual virus, but you know, telling him he had an infection and to call this number for tech support, and I told him, no, Microsoft will never call you in or contact you in any fashion to help you with anything.
Yeah, that's true. But people don't realize that, so they fall for the scam.
That's very true in the enterprise world as well. When you
Let's be honest, will Microsoft ever help you with anything at all?
Unless you have Windows XP.
Microsoft help with anything, not really, but I did read about some sort of it was like virus scanner type program or fixing computer program, and it was like from Microsoft, and yeah, of course you pay, so no, they don't really help you unless you end up paying them eventually for more support or whatever, or possibly.
Well, that's what I told them. I said, you know, Microsoft is almost unique among software companies. Most software companies have a way to contact them and get some sort of tech support, whereas, you know, Microsoft, if you wanted to get them to give you tech support, there's nobody you can contact unless you have a support contract.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, Microsoft are pretty unique in that they can actually sell you a defective product and then charge you for a temporary way of supposedly fixing it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that if there was anything else, you know, whatever it was, if you got sold a product that was defective, you could take it back and say, look, I either want a replacement or I want money back. Can you do that with Microsoft Windows?
but the people kind of, well, people sort of know that Windows doesn't really work that well because of whatever. I mean, if you look at mobile phone, because it's like, you know, like, and it's like iPhone or Android. Hardly anybody actually wants Windows Phone. Apparently, it's mostly in Europe people who actually have Windows Phone, but when people get a choice, that's the other one. I mean, the subject is probably very common for these podcasts, but okay, we can do it again, why not? You know, when you get people having a choice in the mainstream, people generally do not pick Microsoft. I mean, it shows in the mobile world.
Well, to be fair, let's give credit where credit's due. I mean, if they were, you know, purely based on, you know, what they're offering, I mean, Microsoft can obviously, you know, because the Xbox proves that. I mean, they've made a decent gaming system. Going head-to-head with Sony. But, you know, they have got a decent gaming system. Now, that to me shows that Microsoft, when they have to, can produce something. And, okay, their phones are not up to scratch. I've never used a Windows phone. Don't think I'd want to. But at the same time, it would be interesting if it was a more level playing field like, you know, they've got on the consoles. You can bet. If there was no disadvantage. In other words, if you could phone up somebody like likes of one of the local call centers here, and they had likes of, for example, they had instructions for Ubuntu, they had instructions for Mac, and instructions for Windows, and there was no disadvantage. Nothing like sort of, oh, I'm sorry, we're not dealing with you because you run this. If there was none of that, and people had a genuine choice, I don't think anybody would willingly choose Windows. I mean, you know, I mean, one thing that makes me think is it's almost like, you know, they've bullied their way into the desktop PC and the laptops and that.
and they're staying there, you know, and they've basically made legislation and they've got contracts so that they're installed in every machine. But I wonder how different Windows would actually be, desktop Windows, if they were forced to compete like they do with the consoles. I mean, they've obviously done well because, you know, I mean, it's no coincidence the Xbox has actually done quite well. I mean, it must be a fairly decent system.
Well, you talk about their... You talk about their other products, and the last few days I've been seeing, at least on Hulu, ads for this Microsoft Band, which looks like a cross between a fitness bracelet with a very few smartphone or smartwatch style functions. And I look at that and I say, even if this wasn't from Microsoft, I don't know who wants to buy it.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some fan out there who will buy every single Microsoft product there is.
I mean, I wouldn't say nobody wants their stuff because at my school, of course, I'm dealing with kids like age 12 to, you know, 15. The device they all want is a Surface Pro. Like, they all want a Surface tablet. So, I mean, the marketing that Microsoft is putting out there is working.
I see that in a lot of colleges, too. The young professionals, they all want the Surface Pro right now.
Is that actually quite an exclusive thing to across the pond? Because in Britain, nobody wants a Surface. I mean, we were given a bunch of Surfaces to try out, and the kids refused to even try them out. They were given them for free. Nope, we're not interested. So I'm actually wondering, have they been focusing exclusively in North America in their advertising campaign?
Yeah, so this, I've got 2 points now there. So, okay, Surface Pro you mentioned. Well, we just came up earlier with probably free time swing, but I bought the Remix OS tablet and the Remix OS mini thing that you put into your TV and so on. It runs a customized Android and stuff by free form of Google employees. And it's more desktop-like, and you can put your keyboard and mouse in with your OTG device. That might amaze you, but anyway. But the tablet itself, it looks like the Microsoft Surface Pro. It's like a Chinese copy. The hardware will look like that. The operating system is obviously different, because like I just said. But I think Harry brings up a good point there, because in the UK, no one wants... Surface Pro is it's not really known as such. Generally people want iPads. People think they want iPads in schools and so on. And iPad, and more iPad. So
that's very Apple. Not that that's any better.
It's going to be that much better, but yeah, it's very Apple in the UK.
Yeah, I agree with that. Actually, oddly enough, we were actually given, I'm talking about us as teachers, we were given Surface Pros to try out, and most of us rejected them. And the big reason we rejected them was because the Windows 8 tiling...
They had problems with Windows 8. They need tiles and so on. But saying all that, Windows 10 has improved over 8 and 8.1, definitely.
This computer's never actually had Windows on it. No, sorry, this computer, I'm saying that. It's a new computer. My last computer didn't have Windows on it either. But I'm talking purely on the tablet that we were given. It was Windows 8, I think, or Windows 8.1. I don't care, actually. But I tried it, and to be fair, it was actually nice on the Metro interface. But see, as soon as you actually loaded up an application, that application more or less was designed for a mouse. And it was not designed for touch screen. I struggled to get any of the menus open. Even when I keep closing the application, I struggled to get it closed because you had a tiny area of the screen which was designated to close, maximize, minimize. So, of course, click there was basically potluck. Now, so, I mean, although the Metro interface was quite nice, the applications it was running were still designed for a mouse.
I don't know, I mean, they used to have Windows RT, I think it was called like a sort of tablet, it's like Windows 8 for tablet, but I think they've dropped that since, because people got confused between the two versions anyway, like normal Windows for desktop and then tablet, which might be what the Surface Pro came with, actually.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, we've been talking about the various things. Has anybody here got a Tizen for?
A which thing?
Tizen.
How was that spelled?
No,
Say that again.
I've never heard of that. What's the spelling?
Oh, T-I-Z or Z over there. E-N.
You haven't heard of that one, really. Yeah. That's basically Samson's plague thing or playground.
It was an open source project. A proper open source project. Intel were actually one of the main contributors who started it. But I've kind of been interested. But the thing is, the reviews I've heard online have been actually very good for the Tizen phone. I just haven't actually been able to get my hands on one. Although it is next to my hit list. I'd like to try a Tizen phone.
I was a bit like that with Firefox OS. I wanted one Firefox phone for years, right?
Don't talk to me about Firefox.
And then it was like, I've got one now as of September. But it was like, oh, you can't really buy it here because of whatever. You have to go somewhere else online and get it. And I think Tizen is the same, going for the same kind of thing, because I've read that they were trying out in, say, India, trying out in the market there. I think they're doing the, like, Firefox Mozilla route where they're going to target the developing world, but now, saying all that, Firefox OS is over, it's had it, it's not going to be on phones anymore. Mozilla have given up. I think it will carry on TVs from Panasonic and that just about, but that's it really. But Firefox OS is actually quite nice for what it is.
Firefox OS has a nice design to it, but it doesn't get the basics right. I mean, the biggest problem, I've got two Firefox OS phones here. Ooh, one low-end, one medium-end. I've got the ZTE Open, which was the first Firefox phone you could buy in the UK. I've also got the Geeks Phone Revolution, which was, at the time, it was kind of higher-end. Now it's very much mid to low-end. But the biggest problem with them both is not actually usability. They're both quite usable, but with both of them, it's the battery. I mean, they just, with Firefox OS, they just couldn't even last a day. I mean, they were lasting 6 hours maximum, and that was with no phone calls. No, the odd thing about Firefox OS was you could be on it all day and it lasts, the battery lasts. You could not be on it all day, it could be standby all day and the battery lasts. It just had a real problem with battery life. It had a lot of features missing, but it showed promise in the early days. But now, of course, Mozilla have said they're moving away from phones and going towards internet. So basically, that's Firefox always dumped as a phone.
I haven't actually made calls on my Firefox. Alcatel one. I got on Amazon quite cheap. I haven't actually made any calls on it or text yet, but for like, looking around the app, looking at the interface and so on. Yeah, it does seem very nice. As for battery life, I mean, I haven't used it for calls and text like I said, but I've had that phone on a lot in general otherwise, and it seems to work quite nicely with the battery.
Something different, because even with having it on standby with the Revolution or the ZTE, it would not last more than about 6 hours. It just went totally dead. From fully charged to, you know, having no text, no phone calls, no anything, it would just go dead.
Sounds a bit like the BQE.4.5 Ubuntu phone, because I'm not sure if I mentioned this when you were on here, but yes, I lost my one after, I already mentioned that here, so. Anyway, but when I had that phone, I remember always having to plug it in a lot, the BQE.5 Ubuntu phone. That phone really does have a bad battery. I remember reading comments where people were saying the same thing quite a lot. One or two were like, oh, actually, my battery was okay. But yeah, you don't really want a phone that you need to actually go to the charger a lot with, because that kind of defeats the point.
Well, you can understand having a charge once a day. I mean, that's a kind of given with a smartphone once every day, but once every 6 hours.
Ahoy! I am returned.
Yay. Hello.
Hey, welcome back.
Happy New Year.
It's not quite yet here.
What time yet?
9:14.
No, 2:14 here, so I passed it 2.25 hours.
I take it you're in the UK.
Oh, yes. Although you could probably guess that from my accent.
You have an accent?
Really?
Well, we have been listening to Gordon all afternoon.
Look, that's not even a real accent. That's a Southern Scotland accent. That's just a Central Belt accent, you know. I don't even consider that Scottish. To say that to him, that really wind him up.
So, which part of Scotland are you from?
I'm from the Isle of Lewis in the northwest, the Outer Hebrides.
You, by chance, know any Gaelic?
A little bit, but I'm not fluent. I wasn't, although I'm from here, I wasn't brought up by people from here, so my Gaelic is limp.
Hello, Cymru Hashif.
Sorry, say again, I was coughing at that time.
Hello, Cymru Hashif.
Hamu Gumar Tapalish, Cymru Hauhain.
Hamu Gumar Tapalish.
Theodol, who are you?
I reckon this is the first New Year's show with Gaelic on it.
And you still haven't answered me, by the way.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying you still haven't answered me, by the way. I'm deeply offended by that.
We've kind of come to my limit there.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, I'll give you one more word of Gaelic. And I'm enjoying a wee Ishka Bear. Do you know what Ishka Bear means?
I do not.
Ishka Bear is what they call whiskey. And literally translated, it's the water of life. So if you're in Scotland and you get offered Ishka Bear, it's whiskey. It could also be, whiskey could also be referred to as Shivik, which means wee one. And what they refer to there is most Scots drink whiskey. So you're either offered a beer or a wee one, a wee dram. You know, so Shivik means, basically means a wee dram.
So it'd be something like, say, add some whiskey to the tea, would be ku and ishkabir owns and tea, something like that.
Ishkabir owns and tea. I've never heard anyone actually say that. I would probably more likely have heard people say ishkabir agus and tea, agus cop and tea. So, you know, a whiskey and a cup of tea. Not many people in Scotland would put whiskey in their tea. More likely put whiskey in a coffee.
And I don't know the word for coffee, so.
Coffee. That's it.
Ah, there we go.
So you could maybe say something like, coffee, agus ishkabir.
So just out of curiosity, at some point in the future, could I pick your brains a little more?
Yes, no bother. Do you listen to my show at all?
What's your show?
Tux Jam.
Oh, I will add it to my playlist for sure.
I was going to say, at the end of every Tux Jam, I always talk about how to contact me, so you can contact me through that, those various media. Hey, just out of curiosity, is anybody else here a YouTuber? Like, do you put videos on YouTube?
Yes, I do.
Right, flicking tell me how the heck you do it, because I have tried the last few months just putting a podcast on YouTube. It never ever uploads. Apparently it uploads, but processing goes 95%, then it fails, and I've just given up because each time I've always got this freaking copyright notice, takedown notice, which I always dispute and always gets, you know, renewed in my favor because I use Jamendo Music. But
do you know what's triggering?
What's this nonsense with 95% processing and then it fails?
Do you know what's triggering the copyright? Is this music or?
Oh, it's always music. But the thing is, all of my tracks that I use in the podcast are to Commons Music. They're all from Jamendo. So I always rebuke them and I say, look, this is what I got the music. This is the track. It's the license free standard. I can use this. And very often it's, I've tried to upload three shows and in three out of three, it's basically said, you've got a copyright claim. Okay, it's been dropped.
So, yeah, I run into that same problem because I upload very obscure music, a lot of things like old records that I find that are to the local vicinity I live in that, you know, you can't buy on any digital format now. And I found some simple things like using the time stretch tool in Audacity can fix that for you. You're obviously kind of messing with the pitch and time of the audio, but I found that or adding some type of granular noise to the audio bypasses those filters.
Oh, interesting. But the thing is, it's not even that simply the filters. The problem is it uploads 100%. That's no problem. Yeah. But then it saves me processing. And processing goes from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% up all the way up to 95%, then just stops. So basically, I've done it 3 months in a row, and I've just kind of given up now. YouTube, I'm basically sticking my two fingers up to it. I mean, it goes on to SoundCloud, no bother. It goes on to Vimeo, no bother. Actually, plug the show. If you're on Vimeo, type in Tux Jam, TuxJam. You'll find it. But the problem is it just doesn't seem to. It's almost like it's not interested in YouTube. I contacted YouTube to say this is a problem. They ignore. I was like, okay, fine.
Well, Kevy, you were asking earlier about our libations. I've moved on from beer to drinking single malt Aberlour from a GNU Linux Voice coffee cup.
The Aberlour.
That came in.
Sorry, carry on.
No, I'm drinking out of a GNU Linux Voice coffee cup, which came in the mail today. It's got RMS on the back of it.
I got to visit the FSF this past August.
Please tell us all about it.
Well, it kind of felt like going to the White House. I was in Boston and just, I was like, yeah, I'll look up, because I mean, you know, I've seen the address of the FSF a million times because it's in the header for every piece of GPL licensed software I've ever looked at. So I just pulled up a piece of code and there was the address and dropped that into Google Maps, and it turned out I was a block away. So I wandered over and rang the doorbell, and I was like, hey, I'm a member of the FSF, and they're like, come on up. And so I went up and they gave me a little tour and showed me around. RMS wasn't in, so I didn't get to meet him, but he's got a pretty cool office. They've got GNUs, stuffed GNUs all over the place.
I have actually met RMS and talked to him briefly because I went to one of his speeches, and I talked to him briefly at the end.
Well, I haven't been in quite such august company, but I did get to meet Mad Dog at Ohio Linux Fest and talk to him for a while, so that was pretty cool.
Mad Dog's a cool dude.
We also met the guy who, the guy who started Libre FM. Where'd we go quite?
Well, I'm looking at the Libre FM. I've heard of it, of course. I may have to sign up for that sometime.
Yeah, it's... I used to listen to Last FM for years because that's quite popular in the UK actually. But that's the proprietary music, but you could stream it. You stream different stations, you could have your known music like that, but then because of money issues or whatever it was, they kind of made the stream become YouTube, which was annoying, and then you could only play so much, and then it wouldn't let you play more, you had to reload or to get around and all the silliness. So they still used it, but then even more recently it's all just gone to Spotify. So I thought, you know, I don't want to use Spotify at all really, so I thought, well, I can just, when I actually start listening to Creative Commons music more properly, so I've got a last Libre FM, and yeah, I've been, and you can stream music on there, like a bit like your last FM, and that's fine, except it's obviously, it's Creative Commons music now, which is what I wanted to listen to more.
Well, I mean, every time I've tried out Jamendo, it seems to be, you know, way over towards more metal than I like. So, how is a usual stream on Libre FM?
First of all, how bad is my sound actually? Because K-Rush keeps on saying to turn the mic down. And yeah, there's a little metal on Jamendo and Libre FM, but there's other stuff as well.
Well, I used Jamendo on a kind of fairly weekly basis, and well, no, let's be honest, daily basis. The thing is, I wouldn't say it's that much metal. I mean, there's a lot of different style. I mean, you can actually choose, you know, kind of country, folk, whatever. I mean, you don't actually have to choose the metal style. It has a wide range of stuff on it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've poked around in Creative Commons music, so it's probably time I do it again. I really enjoyed Nerdcore, but most of that stuff is actually proprietary.
Really?
Well, I don't know what type of music obviously you like, but are you a fan of CC Jam at all?
It's been a while since I've tried listening to it.
Well, CC Jam is one of the podcasts I kind of started, but it was not meant to be my podcast as such, because I just wanted to be anybody that found any Creative Commons music to submit stuff to. Basically like an HPR before CC music. And I'm trying to kind of go through that. But I mean, that actually, I've released the last kind of few shows, but it's something that basically, if you find CC music, you know, you like it, just give a very brief yarn to, and then...
Ah, that reminds me, yeah, CC Jam. Maybe I should do... one
Please, if everybody listening to something would be great. You know, I mean, purely because I haven't done one in a few weeks, but we've not had one in a few weeks, so of course that basically means CC Jam's not been going on. It just seems to be I've had family around and I've had visitors around, so you can't actually just say to your family, right, sorry, I'll see you later. I've got recorded it here, by the way.
Is CC Jam still getting shows? Because I looked for that for ages, but is it still going?
The last one was about 3 weeks ago, so that's the reason I'm saying it. I would love it to be like, not even like HPR in the daily sense, I'd love it to be weekly, but at the same time, I don't want to be doing every one myself.
Yeah, so if I want to do a CC Jam, do I just record something and then let you know, basically?
Well, essentially, if anybody wants to listen to this, I do actually have a blog post out, but all you need to do is if you've got a band you like, then all you need to do is record yourself giving a brief waffle. Now, somebody even did this on a phone. You don't actually need to have any professional recording setup. So record whatever you want. I mean, if it's just, listen, this isn't the band I like, you know, they're from here. Yeah, you don't have to have that. That's just a case of this is the band, this is a track. I like them because they're good, you know. At worst, that's the best you can do. But I mean, if you can do better, that's fine. And then say, all right, okay, and we're going to leave you with this track. So basically, you've got two tracks, one to start the show, one to end the show.
Yeah.
All you need to do is record the middle bit. Send me the links to the two tracks or the two tracks themselves. I'll put them together. I'll release them as a CC Jam show.
Is this something you're already releasing?
Yeah, I think we're on episode about 35.
Oh, wow. Wasn't aware of it.
Give me a second. I'll pop the CC Jam, my blog post link into the chat room.
I think I want to do one, actually, because I've been missing something on the FM. It actually gets off Jumendo, really, but they're on there. But yeah, there is actually two tracks that I could put in and say something. So I might just do a CC Jam, yeah.
How about go ahead and put the link to your blog in the show notes? Also, would you be interested in, say, a quick show on American old-time music?
Sorry, are you talking to me?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, of course. I'm always interested in doing any shows at all. I love podcasting. I genuinely do. It's a genuine lover. So,
what is it, Ubuntu UK, that always use the, like, 1920s track for their intro music?
That does sound, yeah, Ubuntu UK's got a very old track. yeah, probably is 920.
I'm talking about even older than that, you know, going back to pretty much ending in the 19-teens and, you know, music of the American Southeast.
So is this something that there's actual recordings of, or are we going to be singing Camptown Races here?
Well, I mean, recordings of, you know, people playing it now, but old songs.
Oh, okay.
Camptown Races.
Although there are recordings of old recordings as well that exist.
And by the way, Kevy, I always have, loved your music selections on your shows, like Tux Jam and Cribbins and et cetera.
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, same here. I like it as well.
Well, I think it makes a difference purely when you listen. I mean, to be honest, I make a point these days. Since I actually moved over to Linux, I make a point listening to CC music first and whatever music second. So I think maybe one of the things that I would say is it's not like I pick them out of a hat. I do actually listen to these things and think, oh, that's good.
I mean, it's just more CC music, but like I'm using Libre FM more now anyway, so that's the start of that, really. And if I start listening to your podcast again, and Quivens as well, then there'll be more CC music anyway.
See, I rarely, just sit down and I need to get back in, sit down and listen to music at all anymore. I think in the 90s, talk radio sort of replaced music for me, and then got on the internet, or at least got broadband and got into Linux, and of course podcasts occupy most of my listening time now.
Actually, to be honest, I'll probably agree with you there. I do tend to listen to more podcasts than do anything else, purely because one thing I find about radio, I don't know what it's like in the States, but over here, I mean, you might hear, they might have 50 songs, and you might think, oh, there's 10 of them good. And you think, that's okay. and they'll play the same 50 songs all day. And then you go the next day and they play the same 50 songs all day in a different order. Then you go the next day and it's the same again, same again, same again. That's the one thing that drove me away from commercial radio. So, no, I must admit, I do tend to listen to Commons music whenever I can, whether it's through Jamendo or what, or the FMA. But the other thing I've noticed is, I don't know, is it petty on my part? But if I'm swithering of a Bandcamp album, if I'm really swithering, I'm going, will I or won't I buy it? I'll look at the license. If it's copyright, I'll say, no, I'll buy it. If it's Creative Commons, I'll go, yeah, okay, I'll put the money.
Ahoy, bro.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, or, well, in a couple hours for me.
Hello.
I think this is the year I dropped off the face of the earth in terms of HPR and the hacker community.
Yeah, I haven't seen you around much.
Well, that's kind of why we do this show. There's people, you know, there and why I think I can speak for Honky. We really wanted to do the show this year because there are people that this is the only time we get to talk to you. Face to face isn't right, but voice to voice or whatever, you know, all year long. And I don't mean just you, bro, but I mean there's a lot of people. This is the only time we actually directly interact.
Yeah, sounds about right. For some of us.
Yeah, I've always been lurking. In fact, I remember back on the Binary Rev Radio, listening to Digital Dog Pound show. That was his name.
Yeah, it's funny. Brome and I have actually hung out IRL more wow. than we've talked to each other this year.
Yeah, well, that helps when you have a bigger house. Yeah, that's where I've been mostly, is working on the house. I mean, it was a house that was a flip, you know, but we've been spending a lot of time customizing it and that sort of thing. And I mean, I did get to go to South this year. But so anyway, what have I missed, just in general?
Well, we were talking about Creative Commons music.
Lots of Star Wars.
Yeah, I missed the Star Wars talk. Now, I have not seen it yet. Is it worth my time and money, or should I just skip it?
Yeah, I've seen it. So I've not done Star Wars, really, so I haven't seen the first six for ages. But I've seen the new one, and, well, yeah, it's very similar to the old ones, but there also are differences. So
okay.
I would say it's definitely worth a watch, actually, really. Especially because normally you wouldn't, partly because of the hype, but not just that. It is actually generally quite a good film.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go see it if this weekend. If nothing else, there's no way I can continue listening to podcasts without it being spoiled for me after this next week. I'm just certain of that. So I might as well go see it.
I will go see it when it's up in the local cinema. Unfortunately, that's no guarantee it's going to be in the near future.
Can you say that again?
I was saying I will go and see it when it's up in the cinema, local cinema here. Unfortunately, that's no guarantee it's going to be future.
Oh, because it's just a small island, is that what you mean?
Yeah, we tend to get films a few months after they're released. That's one thing that's annoying.
Now, I assume it's over there, just like it is here, that a bunch of the little mom-and-pop theaters closed when everything's switched. They had to go to digital.
Not quite. Everything had died off when the economy kind of went out in 2008, including the drive-in theater here that actually went out of business after 50-some years.
But in the UK, I mean, there are some smaller cinemas who will show some unknown film or not particularly known, and maybe the occasional known film. But yeah, it's mainly big companies who have taken over cinemas, really.
Yeah, and to be honest, they offered a better experience in the theater. You had bigger, more comfortable seats, and they would keep it clean.
Well, I'm just actually looking. The local cinema here, according to their own website, is going to show Star Wars The Force Awakens on the 29th and 30th of January. So it is coming relatively
soon. Well, they're a month after everybody else.
Well, our local theater here had been subsidized by pretty much by one of the doctors for the last 25 years. It may be breaking even, but never made a profit. But, you know, what killed every other little theater is that distribution went on, the new movies went to digital exclusively, and they couldn't afford to switch over equipment since they weren't making any money anyway.
The theater in Fayetteville, North Carolina, just barely managed to raise enough money to do the switchover.
There's been also a resurgence in theaters that show 35mm and 60mm films now. Tickets are a little more pricey, but...
Yeah, but you'd have to be in an area where, you know, people would want to go to that sort of film, see an older film in the theater. I mean, small town America, you know, no, they want the new movie with the explosions. They don't care about that stuff.
Yeah, that's a 4-hour drive for me, but it is cool seeing some of those older formats.
Well, at least most of y'all have theaters. Back home, it was a pretty fair drive to get to a theater.
Well, that's like me now. It's you know, if I want to go to a theater, it's a minimum of an hour drive.
And well, I'm not quite that bad. I mean, I'm 15 minutes too bad. 15, 20 minute drive.
10 minutes, maybe 15.
Yes.
And unfortunately...
Yeah, from mine, there's one about 20 minutes away in the car. And then if you go to the actual city, then there's actually two there, and then there's another one a bit further away as well. So there's actually 47 miles in this area, basically. Main cinema I'm talking about. Not, there's this little small one as well, but that's for not big movies, really.
And unfortunately, I think there's three this spring I'm going to have to go see rather than waiting for them to hit Redbox. Force Awakens, Superman versus Batman, just because people are going to be talking about it the next day, too. And I've seen the trailers for Deadpool, and that looks awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that is actually slightly annoying with films, to be honest, how certain films, it's like, oh, you know what, you gotta go to the cinema and see that, and ideally quite soon when it's been on. I mean, we've just had a new James Bond film as well, which is obviously very popular in the UK, and actually that was the most popular film this year shown in the UK, not including Star Wars, because that just came out. And then followed by, I think it was the Hunger Games, something like that, Mockingjay Part 2. But yeah, I mean, I watched Spectre the other week, and even though it had been in there about 3 months or 2 months already, I had to sit on the front row. That's how full it still was. James Bond, has anyone actually watched James Bond who is not from the year? Because it's like it is quite global, but I suppose not as big as... obviously Star Wars and things like that, but it's kind of what one of the film things that England is always known for.
I can't actually remember the last time I've been to the theater. I haven't seen the new Star Wars. I'm going to wait till it comes out on DVD, and spoilers be damned.
If you see a 3D film in the UK, do you have to return the real 3D glasses they use, or is it or can you keep those?
That's a good question, actually. So, in the past, like all the other year, you could just basically walk out with them. You're supposed to return them, but people walk out with them. Now they basically want you to pay £1 for them, but you could just say, "Oh, I bought them online," and then you know you get them given them anyway. But yeah, they are trying to get some money off them now, because otherwise people just walk out with them.
Yeah, I caused a bit of commotion because I was walking out with them, and then I found out, you know, I'd be charged again and again for that premium. So I only see the 2D films now. I don't think it's worth the $5 or whatever they charge me.
I don't really see the 3D as such anyway, so I guess I do here and there, but I never really notice it as such, so it's a bit of a waste of money. But on the other hand, I guess it's kind of... it's supposed to be better, so I would normally go for the 3D show rather than 2D if there is one.
Yeah, I try getting new glasses, and I've tried seeing 3D movies a few times, and I can only perceive it if I have my glasses off, but by that time I can't even see the edges of things, so...
I also wear glasses as well, so... but I think it won't really make any difference if having them on or off underneath anyway, so, yeah.
That was my last experience of 3D. Of course, that was 30 years ago when they had the cardboard glasses. But, you know, I tried to put them inside my glasses, outside my glasses. I couldn't focus either way. And either I saw a blurry movie or I didn't see it at all.
Yeah, and I also found I got migraines that were pretty bad.
And I called them the other day and I said, will your 3D glasses fit over my lenses? And they said, well, if you've got... really big lenses, which I do, not huge, ridiculous lenses, but, you know, I always like to have as much glass out there in front of me as possible. So I'm not going to pay for a ticket online, then get up there and find out I can't see anything. So I'll go by and check their, you know, may go by the theater when I'm in town and say, hey, can I try on your glasses? But I'm not going to book a ticket without knowing what the outcome is going to be.
I have pretty thin polycarbonates, and I would say I have no problems. I can see the 3D. I can't remember what film I last saw in 3D, and it was like, it wasn't really a good film, but you could definitely see some of the effects. So I have no problems with it. But yeah, if you've got Coke bottles 50, you're probably going to have some trouble.
That's an interesting idea, like saying you're going to try the glasses on first. But even with the new Star Wars, you know, I never really noticed any 3D as such from when I was watching it, but then my brother said at the end, when the credits on me, he's like, oh look, if you take your glasses off, you can see two stars there, or you can see, so the one down the credits. Then, okay, I saw that, but yeah, it's a bit annoying with 3D. Same with high definition TV. I don't really notice a difference between that and standard definition as such, so it's all a bit, yeah.
Well, I'll argue that one though. There's a huge difference between HD TV and regular standard TV. I mean, even with just like if you watch some of the broadcasted channels and the ones that are broadcasted in HD versus regular TV, the amount of clarity and the difference between the two is very, very noticeable. I mean, you notice them a lot, especially in like live broadcasts of stuff, like live broadcasts of our football games and hockey games and stuff like that. You can really notice the difference, but there's a huge difference with that. Now, I got a question for you. Do you know, do any of you know anybody who actually bought a 3D television or has a 3D television at home?
No. Yeah, my neighbor.
No, I don't.
Do they use it a lot?
I know.
Never.
I tend not to associate with people who would buy such frivolous technology.
Well, to be fair, he didn't actually buy it like off the shelf. He bought it secondhand off Facebook. And basically, he got a good actually deal because he got a 55-inch 3D TV for about a couple of hundred quid. I would have paid that for it.
The thing is, in the UK, well, okay, America will be a bit different, sure, but in the UK, there really isn't really any 3D content anyway, so there's a little bit here and there.
By the way, if you get a good deal on a 50-inch television, you can't pass that up.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't blame for it. I mean, most of it, we're the same. We've not got quite a 50-inch, but we've got a case of somebody on my wife. Well, I'm not on Facebook, actually. What do you think of this? And I'm going, buy it now. That was within 2 minutes of it going up. And it was a 46-inch HD. Yeah, that'll do me nicely.
When I was in Raleigh, my roommates had a 52-inch TV that had been left there by a previous roommate when he left, so basically got a free one.
Are TVs considered less expensive in America?
Well, really, there were some good Black Friday deals I took advantage of, but they were dumb. There's hundreds of dollars price difference between smart TVs and dumb TVs, and I didn't think the smart TVs were such a great deal, but I walked into Walmart and got a 50-inch for, I think, $145.
A dumb TV, like?
One of the things we do in America, though, I've noticed, is if you buy the TV at a brick-and-mortar store, they're usually taking another television and all its components and upselling it on you. So you end up with models that are made for Best Buy, Walmart, etc.
Well, that's true. I'm sure a lot of these cheap ones are no better than what they absolutely have to be to get out the door.
Yeah, every single deal you see like that for Black Friday, they're all just upsells of some previous model. And to be honest, in my experience traveling overseas, it seems like TVs are a bit cheaper in America. But then again, I've really only been in the cities, so.
Anyway, guys, just now 5 to 3, I'm going to my bed. Good night, boys.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me today. I'm just a guest. Thanking you.
Well, no more guests than any of the rest of us. You know, we're all contributors to the podcast. So no reason to feel you're any more out of place than anybody else here.
Why, thank you very much. But anyway, I'm going to say good night.
Now, to answer the question about 3D. I did notice all the ones in the store seem to advertise 120 hertz, which used to be, you know, what was necessary for 3D, but no mention of 3D at all on anything I saw this year.
Is anybody else hearing fireworks?
Nope.
Do gunshots count?
Yep.
Yes, we'll count gunshots.
Then yes.
You know, it's funny. I left Fayetteville and the number of gunshots I heard went down dramatically.
Was that because you didn't have to make them anymore?
Come on,
you walked into that one.
No comment.
I did 5 minutes ago hear, like, you know, almost like a doorbell ding from one of my electronic devices that I don't think I've ever heard before. And that always freaks me out, being alone in the home. And I hear an electronic noise and I think, nothing that I have makes that noise.
You sure it just wasn't your neighbor stopping by to watch movies?
Nope, he's out of town right now. And I don't have a doorbell, so I don't. It must have been the tablet, but if so, it's a noise it's never made before.
Yeah, you ever have the game where your device goes off and you have to figure out which one it is?
So anyone doing any year-end donations?
I donated a few bucks to the FSF, but that's about it for me. Most of my historical society memberships and the like come due later in the year, about April and May.
I don't have the link. I'll try to find it. I don't, used to be up on Linux Basics, but probably be a nice gesture to throw some bucks John Neustetter's way to support the server.
This before I made my donations this year.
And Jonathan Nato.
Always a good choice.
Accessible Lord computing.
And his little project to do the tutorials I gave to that.
Open FOSS training?
That would be it.
Yeah, I tried to drop enough money to drop a tax bracket. I don't know if I'm successful. I won't know for a little while.
Well, if you need to, you have 2 hours to donate. I know, like I said, the FSF is looking for money. The Norfolk Southern
is 500 on them.
The Norfolk Southern Historical Society is always looking for some cash. We're actually looking at restoring a caboose, so that could use some donations.
I'll keep that in mind. I did see that Software Film Conservancy needed some cash, so I obliged a bit. I've given them some money and some time, but I seem to be mostly giving people money these days.
And I think Wikipedia and the Mozilla Foundation are both asking for some money right now. Yeah, Bert Yerke, he already paid some in. We should acknowledge, really probably a good time to re-acknowledge everybody who contributed. John Neustetter, of course, for providing the Mumble server. Kevin Wisher for providing the stream. Taj, who's right here, for providing the shared etherpad. Bert Yerke for providing the funds to cover the bandwidth on the Mumble server. And Dave Lee offered the use of the Bugcast server, but it was decided, you know, that probably a lot of people would get lost on the wrong server. Josh Knapp from anhonesthost.com for providing the HPR infrastructure, and Honky Magoo and this other dude we don't need to mention for organizing the event.
No, I think we need to thank everybody for showing up. I mean, we kind of slapped this thing together at the last minute, almost seemed like, and we were just kind of wondering whether people were going to show up for it. Man, I'm very proud that people did.
Yeah, I think it's been very successful. We don't have as many crowded in the room as we have before, and I hope people aren't bouncing off, because I can increase the number of connections. Would we see that if somebody tried to connect and couldn't?
Probably.
I might check server logs just to be safe, but we are under limit, so.
Okay, I didn't know what his default limit was.
I think it's 20 users? I don't know.
I think we maxed out on the stream. I think I saw Kevin post that the stream maxed out at 14 at one point. Has it gone up since then? I know he's listening.
Well, he just posted in the Mumble chat that it was default was 20 connections, so we've been well under that all day long. Far as I know, unless there was just a huge amount of people drop in when I was AFK this afternoon.
No, there was a lot of good discussion while you were gone this afternoon. Taj has been in the room for a good portion of the day. Have you? You've been gone for only a little bit, haven't you, Taj?
I had to take off for a little bit to do dinner and stuff, but yeah, I've been kind of around most of the day. So yeah, it's been pretty lively. There've been very few dead spots. I was actually surprised, and most of those dead spots were, you know, at most maybe 45 minutes long.
Those just get stripped out in post anyway.
Right, it'll be completely transparent.
Truncate silence.
Not if you guys talk about it. Jeez, you're ruining the magic.
We'll have to come up with some more magic.
Someone flip the switch.
Oh no.
Oops.
Speaking of which, I'm going to kill and save my recording right here at the top of the hour and restart. It'll only take a second.
Now I can breathe.
And it's time to say Happy New Year to Brazil, Argentina, Buenos Aires, Santiago, Asunción, and Paramaribo.
Thank you. You did that very well.
I had some practice while you were gone this afternoon.
See, I would have managed to butcher even those names.
All right, back to the previous discussion. Has anybody seen a 4K TV or even a 4K monitor?
Yes.
Yes.
I have not seen one in person, no.
Oh, okay. You're behind times. It's all about 8K now.
640KB ought to be enough for anybody.
But what is the difference between, you know, 1080i and then something like a 4K? I mean, the HD, it seems to be pretty darn good, at least as good as that as my eye can see. And then what is 4K, and does anybody... Is there anybody who broadcasts in 4K? Is there any videos out in 4K? Is there any DVDs out in 4K? How can you get something to be able to test to see what that looks like?
Aren't there some 4K videos on YouTube?
There's actually quite a few on YouTube now.
They were shot in 4K?
Yep.
I can't even tell the difference between 720 and 1024.
I actually saw them on display in Tokyo, kind of like a demo, and the source content looked pretty good.
To me, it looks good. It looks better. I mean, there's no doubt that it's better. But I think the jump from standard definition to high definition was much more impressive than the jump from HD to, you know, ultra HD or whatever. I mean, you can see the difference, but to me, it's not worth upgrading yet. I mean, not anywhere near it.
Yeah, on a TV bigger than 30 inches, I think I can tell the difference between 720p and 1080p, but I really can't tell any astounding difference when I rent a Blu-ray versus a DVD. I might as well save the 50 cents. Now, probably if I had two identical or similar TVs and, you know, two Blu-ray players, and I put in the DVD in one and the Blu-ray in the other, probably side by side, I'd be able to tell some kind of difference, but is it enough to mess with? I don't think so.
You have to have the size to accommodate the resolution.
And I think I kind of like agree with that argument right there. I mean, I have a bunch of HD, just regular DVDs and a bunch of Blu-rays as well. And I think there probably is a difference, but it's not a substantial difference. I think one of the big things, like I said earlier, is on like live TV. Like I can, I'll be watching football, and if I watch it in the standard definition, it looks like blurry garbage compared to the HD channels do.
Are you getting Are you getting that through cable or over the air?
Cable through Xfinity.
You can try over the air sometime. It's crazy good because it's not compressed.
I have noticed, you know, what they were saying, you know, when we went to 1080p or whatever, when they zoom in on celebrities, they look hideous now.
You can see all the pores on their faces. And I would love to be able to do stuff over the air, but I'm at a spot where I get like next to nothing over the air. I mean, I want to at some point get a halfway decent antenna and give it a shot, like a real shot. But I'm kind of at like a weird nexus point where most of it's being broadcasted from either Rhode Island or Boston, and I'd have to find a way to catch it just right and get a pole tall enough to be able to make it past the trees and stuff. And I think I can do it, but I think I might be able to get something, but I think I'm at a bad spot for catching stuff over the air. I tried with just like a quick little homemade one, and I got like five channels, but they're like crappy channels. That's not even worth it.
Yeah, I have the same problem. I live in a valley, so the only channel I get is some home advertising channel. That's it.
Yeah, I live.
Can't
that
even
life.
Get the local news.
Yeah, I had to live that life for, gosh, a long time. We up until probably 6-7 years ago, there was no cable TV anywhere near here.
Yeah.
And satellite just was not a doable thing because we live in this big valley, basically. So you couldn't really get a clear shot at the sky to use a satellite. So everybody had these, we all had these, still most of us have them in the backyard, these giant antenna towers that where we, you know, got our analog TV from. Needless to say, we didn't watch much TV.
Yeah, what is it about the home buyer channels that seem to be able to come over, you know, freaking anything? If I got just a wire sticking in the back of it, I can get it like a QVC.
At least around here, it seems like the towers they use for those home channels are not in premium locations. So they seem to be out, you know, way outside the city, which is where I live.
Well, they make sure that they come through so you can buy things.
To be honest, though, with the internet now, I don't see a need to really pull channels over the air or get cable TV.
Yeah, I'm working my way towards the cord cutting. I can't pull the cord. Well, I struggled because I fought so much with Xfinity when it comes to billing. I've noticed after a while that Comcast or Xfinity or whatever has kind of a fuzzy math when it comes to their billing. Right. There's no set thing there at all. That's all kind of, hey, we have this promotion, so we can kind of charge you this. And then we have this other promotion, we can charge you that. And then you take this off, and it kind of changes things. And it's a weird, fuzzy math, and then we'll charge you this if you didn't, you take this off. And anyways, needless to say, I spent a good amount of time arguing over the phone with billing of Comcast, and every time I did, they'd say, okay, we have that fixed, and a week later, they didn't fix anything, and then they go, oh, all right, we'll get that fixed again, and so I wanted to get rid of them completely, but I couldn't get rid of them completely because they're about the only place in where I live that I can get broadband internet, or basically any internet, besides possibly dial-up. So no matter what, I'd have to keep Comcast, but I wanted to cut the cord from just the television, but there's always something like one or two little things that seem to be holding me back. And I mean, I do the Hulu, I do Netflix. I've even gone with the Amazon Prime, which isn't necessarily that great. It's got a bunch of cool little stuff here and there, and then like some stuff will show up on it later on. Like some shows will show up on it like later on that aren't available on other things, but I haven't been able to just make, there's that one last little line that I just can't reach it to cut the cord completely. And one of the big things is actually sports and stuff. I know there's ways to get around that kind of, but I'm right there at that edge of just being able to cut the cord.
I had the chance. I didn't take the time, put up a over there antenna before I moved in, but I don't watch much sports, but as far as episodic TV goes, I can, you know, between Hulu and, you know, various other legal means, there really isn't much that I can't get that's broadcast over the air.
I don't watch TV.
At 50, you're missing out with the Daredevil and Jessica Jones on Netflix.
Broadcast. Well, I agree with you there, but as I said, broadcast, you know, stuff that I'd have to pay a subscription. Well, I guess I am paying for Showtime on along with my Hulu subscription. In fact, I finally threw in the other couple bucks a month for no commercials. Not so much. I wasn't seeing the commercials, but they just, you know, for a 1 minute, for some reason, the show would play, but a 1 minute commercial would buffer for 5 minutes. And I got tired of sitting through that.
Yeah, I had the same problem because I was using Hulu on my phone, and there would be points where I'd have like connection issues, and I would have to, you know, shut Hulu down and then restart it back up again. And when it restarted back up again, it automatically has to go into a commercial. So I'd sit there, go through a commercial, go through about 2 minutes of the show. It would then go to where it was originally supposed to have its commercial, and then it'd have I'd go through, watch about 5 minutes of the show, have buffering problems, shut it down, and then have to start the whole process over again.
So it's like watching commercial TV.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't use Hulu much, but when I did, I just turned on ad blocker, and I would just sit there at a blank screen because I can't stand ads.
You know, TV exists solely to deliver advertisements to you, don't you?
Ah, true.
Oh, I thought they had that worked out, so if you blocked the ads, they wouldn't let you see the show either.
I'm thinking like 2 or 3 years ago. I don't even use Hulu anymore, but when I did, it would just sit at like a black screen and say, you know, we can't display these ads right now, and I'd wait about 90 seconds.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Evening, Lord D. How's it going?
Hello, sir.
I won't know how it's going for a couple of days. I had chemo, a CAT scan. They found a possible blood clot. And today, I had to go back to have another CAT scan to try to confirm it.
Oh, that's not fun.
Is that something they would have to operate on, or would they give you blood thinners to take care of that?
I'm assuming medication because they said I wasn't showing any side effects, so it would probably just...
Well, I hope it's not one of those things that get up and move around. Surely they wouldn't let you out of the hospital if it could.
Well, people, I'm going to have to jump off and do the family festivities, so I'll probably try to hop back on here after midnight, but I'm going to be gone for a little bit.
Rocking, dude.
Yeah, thanks for joining us all day long, Taj. There would have been, without you, there would have been long periods of silence, I think.
That might have been preferable. You know, whatever. I'll catch you guys later.
All right, have a good evening, sir.
Happy New Year. Yeah, I think I might have to drop off, too.
Well, I'm looking at, we'll probably be firing off some artillery around midnight, so I might see if I can capture some of that on here if y'all don't object.
You're going to record yourself firing an artillery cannon.
That's the plan.
Fireworks, rifle, cannon.
Yeah, go ahead and blow shit up. We can celebrate the 2016 by blowing up a small...
Yay!
Well, I am in the mountains of North Carolina at the moment, so...
Ah, we don't need them. Blow it up.
I mean, it is part of the local culture to blow things up.
At some point, I need to go warm up last night's chicken masala before the scotch catches up with me on an empty stomach.
You know what happens when 50 gets drunk? You better do this, 50. He falls asleep on the stairs, although I do not have photographic evidence for this, so it didn't happen.
Never going to let me live that one down, are you?
Not until you find something else to do the next OCP Live.
Speaking of, what is that? We're going to do one for 2016?
It could be in the cards. I don't know. I think, what was it, Last Known God was the one that planned the last one and couldn't actually make it. So maybe we should let him do it again.
Yeah, he got messed over by his bosses at the last minute. That was really not cool.
Cryptastic says we should have it in Canada.
Vancouver's a nice town.
She doesn't have her passport. I don't know what she's thinking.
All right. If it happens in May or just so, that's enough time to get a passport, I think.
Now she's going on about Tijuana and catching a donkey shell.
Oh, I've been to Canada, but I haven't been to Mexico, so who knows.
Well, either way, I think our currency is stronger right now, so probably once we got there, our spending money would go further.
That's true, but, you know, we might have to have one of those agreements where we just don't talk about certain things that happen. At any rate,
of course,
go ahead. I was going to say I'm going to drop off, but that's because I have something I need to tend to.
I was going to say, you know if I go to Tijuana, who's going to get arrested?
Look, if anyone's getting arrested, we all know it's pirate, okay?
Hey, now, that only happened once.
Well, that's just because of the eye patch.
No, that's how he gets the eye patch in Tijuana. And we'd like to wish you a happy new year before I go, and we wish you lots of fire ants in the future, pirate. I'm not sure why I'm being told to say this, but there's a sharp object over my head.
Wait, Bryptastic saying there's lots of fire ants in my future?
I guess so, yes. She's been getting weird fortune cookies lately. She got one that was like, the greatest thing about the number of standards is there are so many to choose from. And I don't know, there's a fortune cookie about fire ants. I don't know, I have to go. This is sharp.
Have a good evening, sir.
And then there were five.
Well, 50, I've got one and routers from Think Tank Hotline.
Which one is it?
CN router that's starting.
Cool.
Well, does that use OpenVPN for connectivity?
I believe OpenVider right off.
I'm still waiting on my Witty board to show up, and I did find out this week that the Banana Pi router is actually working, at least the point. Silly me, I was expecting to plug into the WAN port into my network and have it show up as another device. It's not pulling anything on the WAN side, but if I plug a host into one of the LAN ports, then yeah, it's doing DHCP. and I can go to the home page and get to the login. So it is actually, and in fact, I had HDMI cable on, and when it was going through Grub and everything, I had text on the screen, and it disappeared, you know, when you would have gotten to a login place. So, you know, I'm pretty sure probably, and I've got one of the open WRTs on it, so probably that would be an option if I wanted to enable it, is to, you know, run actually enable video and access the router directly.
So what are you doing with your Banana Pi? What's its intended purpose?
Well, it's one of the it's the Banana Pi router model, so it's my intended purpose, which I started out on a quest last fall and slowly working my way towards it, is trying to use free software to set up security at home like you would have at a business or a web host or something like that. In other words, not only a firewall, but have some connection monitoring with Snorton, etc. You know, whatever I can get that's open source and install freely on the box.
I know that
would be a lot easier. I may try IP Fire. That's the closest thing that actually has an ARM port. And last I read on it, there was a bug in there, but it may. If I hit that bug, all I have to do is re-image the card and start over. Well, actually, if I hit the particular bug, it would actually be a deal breaker. So it'd start over something else. I could also, you know, start from scratch.
Also, you might want to consider looking into antibiotics if you've got that problem.
Lol.
Well, I do have antibiotics in the cabinet, so that's always an option. I was just thinking, one person we've been missing here all day is Jonathan. And for all the ruckus the Tilts guys made about not having the New Year's show, I don't think any of them have been in today, unless it was when I was away from the keyboard.
I haven't heard any of them.
Okay, I should have included you there, Lord D. I was, but you know, when I came on and said, well, I don't think we're going to do the show, you know, Rich and Dan and everybody, you know, were, you know, very vocal about that, not liking that idea. So I'm just wondering where they've been all day.
Well, Rich can sulk often.
Yeah, that would be reason for some sulking.
I know he was trying to get the old job back, and I knew he had a contract, so I hope he's not cleared down to unemployed again.
Hey, y'all, I'll be back here in about 10 minutes.
All right, we look forward to it, Handsome Pirate.
Been any projects?
Not so many. There's been some, I guess, but not in as much detail. This year we've centered a lot more around media than in previous years, and not very much tech otherwise, and no food discussions that I think I've been party to. So that's, you know, first times for everything.
I'm with Fedora and one of the.
Yeah, I look forward to watching that. Whenever scales come up, and it came up during the day again today, I said, well, you know, Matt's going to be out there. Go by and say hi. Yeah, that's one of my first resolutions, is to get the ones I've recorded this year up and going on HPR.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
This is London calling. London calling.
Well, hello. We heard there were fireworks and as per usual when you guys hit the New Year's.
I'm afraid that I did not see any of the fireworks, as I was in a metal club just being served a cider at the stroke of midnight.
Whereabouts in London are you hailing us from?
Well, I was in Camden, but I'm now further west in London, awaiting a train home.
Ah, that would explain the noise.
Yes, please accept my apologies. I'm hopeful that push-to-talk works well in the Android version of Mumble.
Yeah, it seems to work fairly well. Are you using Plumble then, or the stock app?
The first thing that came up on the Google Play Store for Mumble.
Well, you sound really good.
That's good. I'm using Cyanager mod, or, well, a variant thereof on my OnePlus One, and it seems to be pretty decent hardware.
I sound really bad, apparently, but I'm going to try on my Linux OS tablet, I think. I probably have a microphone, so it might work on that, actually, a bit better.
So, Joe, are you a regular HPR listener?
I'm afraid that I am not a regular HPR listener. I have been known to be a contributor, but it's not on my feed list, I must say.
Well, welcome to the celebration.
Thank you very much. It's 3:34 a.m. where I am.
And me.
Well, it's 9:30 and change where I am, so I've got a few hours to catch up.
West Coast?
No, Central United States, Kansas.
I'm afraid my math isn't very good at this time of night.
I'd be 6 hours behind you.
Unfortunately, I have to work this evening, so I have been en route.
Well, have a safe evening then.
Yes, but the company was nice enough to let me show up 4 hours late, so I did get a bit of a break. Get to start at midnight instead of 8 p.m.
New paycheck.
Yes.
So what's being talked about this evening then? Presumably privacy, security, that sort of thing.
Well, Lord D was just asking what new projects we're starting that we're going to continue on into the new year. I guess you could say, you know, what things have we started that were resolved to finish this year?
Anyone have any answers for that?
Well, I'm going to keep working on my ongoing security project. I want to set up my new my home network with whatever security utilities open source provides me, that, you know, to make it more like a business network or a web host, you know, somebody expecting attack, you know, rather than just your off the shelf router, which I have now. Also, I started a project a while back. I expect to finish getting Nagios on a Raspberry Pi for more network monitoring. And I have several podcasts worth of content for HPR, which I recorded going to conferences this year, that I really haven't done my proper diligence in getting it, you know, out of my head and out of the recording and onto an HPR. So I resolved to double down on that. No, we haven't seen him, I don't think. In fact, I don't know the last time I've heard from him.
None of the member reps actually look official in the Google Play Store. If Remix stuff uses as well.
Well, while we're, you know, like we were discussing earlier, one of the reasons we do this podcast or this New Year's Eve show is there's a lot of us that are on, you know, different podcasts and stuff, and we see each, you know, we email and we talk on IRC, but there's this, you know, one time a year that everybody gets together and talks to everybody, and we haven't seen the new barrels at all this year, which is, I think a first.
Yeah, this is pretty neat. I didn't think of joining the Mumble. Unfortunately, I'm tied to an iPhone, not by my choice, but I couldn't listen to the stream on it, so I fired up Mumble.
Yeah, and we don't have a dedicated listening booth, but, you know, as long as we're not running out of spaces in Mumble, which, you know, has not been a problem this year, anybody who wants to just jump in and listen is more than welcome. We'd rather hope you'd contribute and talk, but you know, if you don't think like you have anything you want to say, then, you know, certainly listening is an option.
So the biggest issue that I have seen around the Linux and FOSS and broader tech ecosystem and media sphere this year has been privacy. And it's something that basically any discussion seems to keep coming back to. And the conclusion that I've come to is that... Oh dear, there's a bit of an echo there.
Sorry.
Alright, Joe.
Red, you might want to talk.
Yeah, I'm playing with Plumble right now.
As I was saying, the conclusion that I've come to, Steve, as well as your average person who buys a can I continue, or is there some echo happening from my end?
You're fine.
It's not on your end, Joe. It's Reg doesn't have a headset plugged in, I'm guessing. So when he unmutes the and he also has speak to talk on. So unless he has his mic, he's picking up and no turning on his mic.
And I see. It's very, very difficult to speak when that happens.
And he's got some kind of audio stream going on in the background. So I think that that's triggering his mic as well. But it looks like I think he's working on configuring Plumble to use push to talk.
Okay, well, let me continue for now then. So where I was that privacy is a huge issue for the geek community, as you know, let's call it that, the nerds, the Linux users, the FOSS advocates, the kind of people who are here. But it's also become an issue for the wider community of the rest of the world with things like the NSA leaks over the last couple of years. And it seems to me that it's become a big issue. However, the only solutions that I have seen have come from our community, but they haven't been sufficiently easy to use that the average person can actually implement them. And as a result,
Joe, I actually have in my hand a device that's a little easier for the, and it's a device from Penguin, a router that comes Libre CMC, I think it's called on there, and also ships with a VPN set up on it. So literally I can plug this to my router on the LAN side, connect to this wireless, and I've already got a connection, you know, out of my house set up and going with very little work on my part.
That sounds absolutely brilliant and absolutely well suited to the kind of person that would be in this mumble room right now. However, to say that I'm going to give that to my brother or my parents or my uncle and expect them to know what to do with it, I just can't see it somehow.
Right. The average person is not going to be buying the routers from Think Penguin, unfortunately. Until we have this cross the board, you know, where the industry itself backs encryption, and we get rid of this idea that everything has to have a back door, we're going to continue to have this problem. And welcome, FXB. It's been ages.
Well, silence from FXB. But in retort to that, the problem is that those kind of routers, as you would say, are easily available for those who know. But do you know anyone who isn't the kind of person who would come into this mumble room right now who has ever bought a router in their life? Most people, 99%+ of people get their router from their ISP and never even think about changing it. They never even think about changing the password on it, never mind the firmware on it, or indeed the router itself.
Well, there have been
and I've got a people I deal are slightly more tech, you know, even if it's a game, go out and buy a DOCSIS modem to get a router themselves, you know. I'm
and hasn't you know, Google actually been talking about enabling default encryption on Gmail, so you know it may be coming slowly to the consumer level, but yeah, it's going to have to start in the geek community, because most of us, everything we do is pretty much in the open. So if we're going to defeat built-in back doors everywhere, we're just going to have to encrypt software as much as we can. And you know, it would be nice you know, if maybe developers started to have an eye towards that, like Mumble. If there was a way to encrypt communications, of course anybody can join. Also IRC, I assume there's probably, it's encrypted if you use the SSL port, but since, you know, anybody in the NSA could join any channel on Freenode, so I'm not sure, you know, how much point there is. But yeah, going forward, I think we really do need to start designing things encrypted by default.
Well, you talk about Google there.
wasn't there a story there about how Facebook's chat is now in default in the person spike?
Yes, yes.
But you talk about Google there and how they are championing end-to-end encryption. And I'm sure that as a company the size of Google has a number of people working within that organization who are free software advocates, potentially FSF diehard people who really care about that stuff. But the problem is that something like Gmail cannot exist if end-to-end encryption exists as a standard feature, because Google can't make money if every email that's sent either from or to Gmail is encrypted, because they can't then sell adverts on top of that. So it's not in Google as a company's interest for them to implement end-to-end encryption.
But what are we supposed to think when they tell us one thing, they say they support end-to-end encryption? Are they just going to drop the adverts in email and just go with the search, their Google searches, and have the advertisements in that? Just wondering.
I think it's easy to think about Google as a single entity because that's effectively what we see. But the fact is, it's a massive company made up of hundreds and thousands of people working within the company. And I'm sure, I am 100% sure that there are people who work within Google who are fully committed to...
Did we lose Joe?
I think so.
Apparently so. Not to put words in his mouth, I mean, do we, if Google says they have end-to-end privacy on Gmail, do we trust them? If they're doing the encryption, who's to say they're not, you know, pulling the content out to use it for targeted advertising before they encrypt it and send it on?
And what do end-to-end encryption?
A Gmail login, all of that, they were to, if it doesn't, they wouldn't be pulling a lot of data.
Yeah, they're going to pull their data. They're going to get their information, you know, whatever way they can get it, they're going to do it. Gmail just might be that one part, but... if you log in, I'm sitting here with my Chromebook and my laptop sitting here. I sign into my Chromebook. They got me. They know everything I'm looking at, everything I'm doing, every game I play, every website I go to, every video I see. So, you know, there's no way around that on the Chromebook.
Yeah, exactly. Gmail is just the login, whereas all of the other products are points of data.
And we have seen the encrypted email pay services. The NSA shows up with a warrant and they just flat fold, which is the only thing they can do. So we do need to work towards a new paradigm. But big corporations are probably not exactly the answer, but they may at least be sort of a start. They'll probably be giving us more false sense of security than any kind of real security.
Yeah, but you talk about how Gmail is almost a minor part of it because you've got search and Google Plus and all the rest of it. But the thing is that whatever you search for, you might possibly be interested in, but things that get emailed to you are things that you have already signed up to and therefore you are definitely interested in. I mean, I book a flight with British Airways and it shows up in my calendar because they know I'm definitely flying with British Airways.
Well, I've noticed, you know, a lack of a firewall between Facebook and Google Plus because, you know, I'm 5150 on Google Plus. That's because the email was originally through a Google Domains account, so they don't question that it's not a real name. And then Facebook, I'm, you know, the name is on my gift certificate. But when I'm in G+, and it says you may want to follow, and it's people that I went to high school and college with, you know, something is, in which I keep separate, something is definitely being intentionally leaked through the firewall.
But the question is, why is it being leaked through there? Is it some sinister reason that you can't explain, or is it as simple as cash? Is it as simple as they're trying to gather as much data as they can so they can sell you things that you might want to buy.
Oh, yeah, surely.
Just trying to find whatever they get. Yeah, that's all it is. I go on Amazon. I'm looking at a Fitbit. 5 minutes later, I'm in my Feedly account. I'm reading a story, and up pops an ad for a Fitbit from Amazon or whatever.
Yeah, see, I use, and I hate to admit this, but it is one of the first services out there for web mail. I use Yahoo Mail as my mail, again, under my given name. And if I look up something on Amazon, you know, then the next day I look at my mail, it's right there in my Yahoo Mail.
But isn't Yahoo Microsoft these days?
They're supposedly with Bing, but they were going to switch.
And FXB, you know, if you could increase your gain a little bit, you're a little low.
How do I sound?
I'm futzing around with Plumblock.
Yes, I'm doing the same thing. How does this sound?
You sound great, Rich.
How's my gain, generally?
You too. You're good.
This is completely default. I installed the Mumble app from the Play Store on my phone about 20 minutes ago, half an hour ago.
Same with me. First time ever on this new phone.
New phone and ROMed in the last.
Just install Droid Mark Plumbing.
Yeah, that's where I got it.
Oh, well, I just installed Mumble with an M, just totally standard, from the Google Play Store, within a version of CyanogenMod, but with the Google apps installed. And, well, you be the judge of how it sounds.
Yeah, you sound great. I mean, the Mumble app, actually, that came from the people who write the Mumble application used to be absolute rubbish. So I think you've proved that maybe they've done some improvements. You know, Plumble is like third party, and that's what everybody has been falling back to for a couple years now.
Yeah, I've just looked at the Google Play on this remix thing, and so there was two Mumbles, which was a bit confusing, plus Plumble. 131 isn't, but I just tried Plumble on that tablet and I don't think it's going to work, so I'm stuck with this if it sounds bad, because I couldn't find my headset either.
There are several clients for Android available, most proprietary. Plumble, but be the one that's...
So, yeah, Seb, sorry to interrupt, Seb, whatever your actual name is, are you using a Remix Mini by any chance?
Not at the moment, on the computer now, but I was gonna try it on the Remix OS tablet. I do have a Remix Mini because I crowdfunded that, but I don't know, it didn't seem to work on the Plumble anyway on the Remix OS tablet. I thought I'd see if it would work. Because apparently I've got really bad audio on the computer here. I don't know if, but this is like a headset, I don't know if it how bad it is now or not, but.
Yeah, I use Plumble on the Remix Mini all the time to listen to tilts. I, you know, because the TV in here is pretty stout speakers, so I don't recall if I've ever used it with a headset, but definitely seems to work as a audio monitor through Plumble.
Well, you know, there's two devices that they have, just to be clear, if I'm not being clear enough here. So there's the Remix Mini, which was this year's thing that they crowdfunded. And there's also last year's thing, which is a Remix OS tablet, which is quite nice, quite big, bigger than the iPad Air. But I was just trying it out on the tablet, Plumble, but I don't think I can get sound for some reason, so...
Yeah, I was.
That's amazing.
There's one audio port on the back of it, audio output, so it had four poles.
Yeah, it probably didn't have a mic built in. It might do, but if not, then no, it's not for what I was trying to do.
Yeah, that's the problem I had with it. I believe it does. I'm certain it's got the four pole audio, but you know, when I've got the audio going out through HDMI, that's all I seem to be able to get. In other words, if I plug speakers in the audio port, I'm not getting anything.
Yeah, but you're talking about the Mini or the tablet, because there's two things.
The Mini.
I was talking about the actual tablet they have, not the Mini. I'm saying I have a Mini as well, two Minis actually, that I still kind of need to connect to the TV and actually do something with, but on the other hand, they're very small devices anyway, so they don't really take up much space.
Can I just say that it is amazing to be sitting on a mumble room with people who actually know what the Remix Mini and Remix Tablet are. It's quite remarkable, because I thought that, yeah, okay, it sold a few thousand, but of all the people in all of the mumble rooms on the internet, to meet people who have actually had a hands-on with the same thing that I have is quite remarkable.
This is not the proper Duke thing.
I was going to say, definitely you showed up in the right room.
So it would seem, yes.
Diversity of devices.
Well, I've also got a Pine 64.
For a while, so I will catch up with you all.
Watch you later, Lord.
I've also got a Pine 64 on the way, or at least I crowdfunded it, which is pretty much essentially the same board, except, you know, not in a case and where you could actually install whatever OS you wanted on it. Well, whatever open OS you wanted.
I also got the $9 mini PC. I have to wait until May because I'm getting the additional things with that. But that's like a Debian thing, and then you can have get a pocket PC thing. It's like a mini Debian PC when that comes, I think. Looks a bit like a Raspberry Pi maybe, but this is proper Debian, I think. If I remember correctly, I also got an Arduino board that I'm waiting to see when that comes. We had some few issues with our funding. And I also had an issue with something I crowdfunded earlier this year with another tablet. I talked about that here earlier. The issue is, this guy is not sending what I already paid for out as well, because he's trying to get me to pay for additional things.
And I actually know in real life from Kansas Linux Fest, the chief technical officer for the AI project, Sherlock Holmes, More Intelligent Brother. I don't know what. Probably this is the Mycroft, yes, this is definitely the Scotch talking at this time of night. But yeah, I've got a Mycroft AI on the way. I am hoping for this podcast. Well, not hoping. I'm definitely going to do. I said I was going to do it this fall. I'm definitely going to drive up to Lawrence, Kansas, this spring because at the Kansas Linux Fest we were actually in. Or visited the maker place where the Microsoft or where the Microsoft, that's a big Fruitian switch, but where the Mycroft AI was developed. I didn't realize at the time. I was actually kind of looking at an earlier version because they had a 3D printed mic thing that had software running, sort of as a Turing test type deal, so you could ask it questions and it would try to answer you like a human. So since I knew the people behind that, I definitely funded that project, and looking forward to getting mine this spring.
What was that again? I kind of missed it a bit.
5150, you're funding all these projects. How do you have time to farm?
Sometimes I wonder, but this is
anybody talking? It seems like something dropped out.
Yeah, Joe just left.
Yeah, so what did you say about farming?
I just said this has been a really good year for some very interesting crowdfunding projects, and sometimes I wonder how I have time to farm and mess around with all my new toys at the same time.
I agree with that it's been an interesting year for crowdfunding. I've only really funded, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 projects, but because I've got so much money for a lot to do that with. But there has been some interesting stuff, definitely, and I'm wondering what 2016 is going to bring when it comes to crowdfunding, like actual interesting projects, Linux based usually. There's a lot of rubbish as well actually on crowdfunding. If you look, it's like do I really want to crowdfund this or that? Not really for that, but occasionally we get some really good projects, really interesting stuff, stuff that could change the world if only it became more popular.
Oh yeah, because you get into one and then you start getting links for the other similar projects and say, oh, I already did this one, you know. I came really close because it looked really good. Can't remember the name of the project, but it was like a 16-core, you know, HDMI TV card, you know, one of those portable HDMI out computers where you carry it in your pocket and you plug it in the back of the TV and it's a computer. But, you know, 200, it was at right on $200, and that seemed a little pricey right now.
There's a lot of this though now. There's a lot of devices that will you just plug into your TV now, HDMI cable. So yeah, the Remix Mini is one of those as well. There's lots of this now. And the even stuff that isn't crowdfunding, the Chromecast there and things like that.
Has anybody tried that new Kangaroo computer that came out a couple of months ago and tried to?
No, I don't even know about that. Was it?
Say again, Susie.
I don't even know about that. What is it?
I don't know. I read a story on Paul Thurrott's website where he got a Kangaroo computer. It's about as big as a little Roku puck. Basically, you can plug it into any type of tablet, plug in a keyboard, and there you have a computer. But he was using it with iOS and Windows 8. I was trying to find out if somebody had been able to put Linux on it and blow away the Windows 8. I don't know if anybody can.
So it's called a Kangaroo computer. It's a small computer. You can stick your own mouse and keyboard in and so on. Is that right?
Yep, that's it. Kangaroo. Seen a couple of stories, but nothing else. Haven't seen anybody try to work on it. They just go with iOS and Windows 8. There's 10.
iOS, or do you mean the... probably the iOS then. I think there's like a thing for Mac. There's like Mac OS X for PC, but unofficially.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing the articles on it, but I think it's one of those things everybody said, we'll wait for XDA or somebody to tell us how to put Linux on it before we go look at it. I mean, there's a lot of interesting... you know, Windows tablets and small Windows computers, and we all think, well, if it runs Windows, it's going to have to run a Linux ISO. But there, you know, there are certain devices that resist tampering with the home operating system. So when I come across something like that, I always want to see where somebody else has broke it first before I drop my money on it.
Even the Remix, so not the Remix Mini, because that's more their own thing, but the thing they had the previous year, the Remix OS tablet, that, I mean, I've read some really good reviews about that as well, but, I mean, if you look at it, it will look like one of those Microsoft Surface Pros, because you've got the detachable keyboard and all that metallic keyboard, but yeah, I mean, you were saying there's some good Windows tablets, but there's also some good Chinese copies of those kind of tablets now, really.
I'm looking at the Kangaroo mobile desktop computers, Intel Atom X-Ray 5 Zulu 8500, $99, has Windows 10 on it. They're sold out. 2 gigabytes of RAM, 32 gigabytes SSD, Intel HD graphic, and it has a Kangaroo dock.
A lot of minis coming out and tablets are already available, have roughly that speed. And the hardware is relative. One is most core Atom, even though they are split process, they actually...
Family lost him as he was speaking.
Yeah, I'd heard that on the tablets. I hadn't realized these small Atom computers, some of them share that a similar drawback. So that just reinforces, if you're looking at one of these little computers and saying, well, it ought to run Linux... You know, you probably need to do your due diligence and find an article where somebody says this is A, B, and C, how you get Linux running on this box. I mean, I've been thinking about the Remix Mini. Surely, probably, if I wanted to crack the case open, I would find that there's just an SD card in there, and probably the Pine 64, I think, is almost identical hardware. So probably if I were to grab an image and designed for the Pine 64 and install it, I would probably have a little Linux box. But
the Pine 64, do you mean the Raspberry Pi?
No, the Pine 64 is the first.
Pine. Oh, Pine, okay. You got disconnected as you were saying something. You got about halfway to your point, I think.
Yeah, you were talking about the 32-bit UEFI versus the 64-bit operating system, making it very difficult to install Linux on one of those little Atom boxes.
Yeah, I mean, the tablet's available roughly, and actually, UEFI isn't the hard part. Do that with a bit of futzing around. The hard part are getting the network audio work to get it out.
It's the same old story as a lot of ARM tablets. The drivers are proprietary.
Yeah, although some of the beta trail strange AC peripherals are hard to power.
Sorry, I was just looking at filling in some stuff on the shared show notes.
A Raspberry.
I read about that. Very cheap, well, cheaper than normal Raspberry Pi price, and it's probably quite good. And there was an offer as well, I think it was like, if you join the Raspberry Pi magazine, you get one free on the cover. But it's very cheap anyway.
Yep, did manage to snag one. Bah.
Yeah, not surprising.
I'm not fond of Raspberry Pi. In order to get it to boot, it takes binary blobs. I mean, not just for audio or video or anything, just to get it to boot.
Yeah, I don't like that about it.
FX Blow, where are you from? Wait, say that again, I didn't quite hear that.
Sorry,
say that again, I didn't quite hear it properly.
Not from...
In Kansas, okay.
Well, I think the Zero is a great solution for somebody building robotics or embedded systems or whatever, but every time somebody says, well, if we want to add all the interfaces, that the regular Raspberry Pi already has, you're way past the investment on just buying a Pi. But for somebody who wants to do projects, it'd be great. I haven't got to that point yet. I'm just my single board computers, I'm just using them as regular desktops.
Well, yeah, I've got two Raspberry Pis here, but I haven't really done much over them. So, yeah.
Well, if what you're interested in is embedded at the same price range, you have the chip, which is, you know, like I said, same price, and it actually runs a fully free and upstream kernel.
Right. The chip was mentioned earlier today, and I wanted to tie those two to do a comparison.
I love the idea of this, but I need something that I can order while my hands are, hey, pre-order. Oh, by the way.
Well, if you're talking about the crowdfunding chip, which you probably are, I did crowdfund that. So I have to wait until May because I've got overhead to have the additional this and that with it as well. So I've got to wait until May, but that's okay.
See, that put me off. They went for a crowdfund and then they started. When are we actually?
It did seem interesting though, for what it was on the campaign. So, I mean, so hopefully it's actually interesting when I hopefully actually get that thing.
Yeah, I kind of worry about this is basically a second round of the demanding now.
But crowdfunding is great until there are issues getting what you might be getting, which happens at times as well.
Well, it's like ThistleWeb mentioned earlier, you have, you know, more than one problem with it. First, is it an outright scam? And if it isn't, does the developer, are they overly optimistic about their development costs?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. That a bunch of have put out this product through crowdfunding supply that was actually based on Raspberry as a camera, still image, throw them to GIFs, but only the crowdfunders got one. They didn't offer them as a product. And now they're saying they're going to offer this as a product, and the volume possibly going to make for the interest they found through the crowdfunding, the cost what they're asking. And the other thing, they've been talking about this for over a year, and I've gone from an announcement, a crowdfunding round, what everyone thought was the order, turned out to be that nobody's...
Yeah, so... Okay, Joe, the thing, and I'm thinking the orders of the chip. Oh, let's do the Jailer thing. Jailer was, I don't know if anyone had the Yola phone or Yola. I crowdfunded that last December 2014. And now they can't just send the tablet out because they've got problems with their investor. And I'm wondering if we're going to get that tablet. But what they did with that one, you were talking about having like a second round of funding from CHIP. With Yola, what they ended up doing is funding a lot of the funds on the actual operating system update. So they had there, and investors dropped out or something, and now it's all a bit like, are we really going to get this Yola tablet or not? Those of us who have not got it. And now we're in my other point. You said with one of those campaigns, a CHIP, that only the investor had, so the only people who crowdfunded got that, or whichever one it was. And I was just going to say, with even the Remix Mini, which we've just been mentioning, even that one, apparently the 1 gigabyte model, so I've actually got both. I've got a 1 gigabyte model and 2 gigabyte, but the one with less was only offered on the crowdfunded campaign, whereas the other one is going to be for general sale, I've read somewhere.
The camera next to the guys who are making, and it was only the crowdfunding got that, and they never sold product. This is what they promised a chip, and they've done the crowdfunding, and then they're asking, this seems a bit odd, another crowdfunding, a product.
Well, yeah, I've seen that with something else too. It's like they did a crowdfunding campaign, and then it went in demand. So like, yes, this is going to happen. But then pretty much straight away, they're there with the pre-order as well.
Especially should be an open product.
But you weren't here when I talked about the one that that I contribute to that I've had issues with, because the guy wouldn't send it because I basically ended up emailing him and he said he wasn't sending it to me because. But what was that? That was a tablet that I'm talking about. I've actually got one that I basically contributed to. It was on one of the sites and I did it a few months ago. It was like a cheap tablet, and there was an issue. Like the campaign didn't say so much what it was, like Android, some changes or their own operating system. I emailed the guy, and then it's like you're supposed to claim your tablet, but then there was a problem with that, so I had to actually email them. And then I emailed them and I kind of said, oh, you know, I wasn't really sure what I was getting here, and I was thinking of possibly doing the Patreon thing where you get two tablets and you first have your name put on the website as well. And so second idea that he starts offering me the other perk basically at a discounted price. There's apparently a discount at Goodwill apparently or whatever he said. Once this email discussion I found out a bit more about things. I mean, some of this wasn't even honest, so like you're supposed to get a Google Play voucher in the Patreon perk. But that turns out only actually works in Singapore. I was told in an email as well, which is a bit like, really? And he really wanted me to, like, he wanted to sell more stuff to me. So he's like, can I update your account? In other words, if I say yes to this, he's going to, I basically said, send me all this other stuff and I'll pay more for it. And I ended up doing this in an email, one sentence. And then I basically thought, hang on, I don't want all this other stuff. So I'd have to get out of it. But, he just didn't respond until a month later when he started to send these tablets out, and then he's basically refusing to send anything out at all, including what I'd already paid for. And I'm just, you know, it's like, well, I've got nothing so far, so I just haven't been responding to the last few emails. But I kind of need to do something about that one, really. Apparently there's a parcel in Singapore with what I paid for, but they do not want to open up and then just send that out. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Or it can be. I mean, because some of the people, you don't even know who's doing it.
I can't really afford to invest in a technology crowdfunding campaign. It's sometimes entertaining trying to pick out the ones that are doing genuinely might not.
It is a good idea, crowdfunding, for tech and stuff, but with all these potential issues, what can go wrong? What might go wrong with this? Even the Yola example is a good one, because they came out with a Yola phone, They did that, it took a while in the past. That was a form of mockery of people, and now it's all a bit like questionable if people are going to get the tablet who have not got it.
Somewhat.
Yeah, if you can't afford to lose the money, then don't invest.
Through that.
If you can't afford to lose the money, don't contribute to campaign. But yeah, I agree with that, I think, as well. I don't know, but it's Batman.
Away, 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 away.
I'm watching American football, Alabama versus Michigan State. It looks like it's going to be Clemson versus Alabama for the national championship.
Sports ball.
Oh, you beat me there, Pirate.
Well, did anybody try to get the Amazon Fire tablet, that cheap one they were selling for $40-some, and try to put Android on it?
No, but yeah, they've been trying to sell them like where in the UK and as well with various TV adverts. I haven't seen one for a while, but yeah, they're really trying to sell the Fire stuff over here as well.
Yeah, you could buy them in a six-pack if you want. You can get six at a time for $200. You can buy one for 40-something. I was thinking about getting one and seeing what I could do with it. My Nexus 7 is kind of acting wonky, so I said, well, maybe I can do something with it. I don't use Amazon that much. I order stuff, but I don't watch any of the video, listen to their music or anything. So I've seen articles where guys have put one, but In the end, I just said, no, I'll keep my old Nexus 7.
It's quite cheap, the ED5 tablet, but really all it is basically Android with Amazon's changes. So a bit like, what's it called, say, AN mod, or what it's called, and even Remix OS to an extent. You know, it's Android an open source project, so you can come out with various things based on it. And that's what they've done with Fire OS. So sticking and putting Android on it, well, I suppose you could try, but then you just got an Android tablet anyway.
Yeah, but what? I don't know if anybody has a Nexus 7. When I first got mine in 2013, that was the first time I had one of a Googleification of Android. Once you get the plain old Android with none of that extra junk thrown in, you don't want to go back. And like I said, I didn't want to go with the Amazon version of Android.
Yeah, that's just supposed to be really good for stock Android, that's true. And also, those devices are supposed to be pretty good to the phones to change the OS, so different phone operating systems.
I must be the only one here that actually uses a Firefox phone.
No, wrong. I bought one back in September, very, very cheap from Amazon.co.uk. Well, free from a German company who was selling the French one before by Amazon, but I got it pretty cheap. Firefox OS is quite nice, but yeah, they've given up on it more than I have now, on the phones anyway.
Well, the Fire tablets, for a while, they were $35, but for that $15 savings, you had to accept watching ads on them. I almost pulled the trigger, but right about as I was going to do so, I think I left it till morning, and by then they'd gone back up to $50, and that included the ads.
That's not yet for $40.
FX Pro is leaving Mullet's web, but that's fine, yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, FXB, you're always welcome back on Colonel Panic Godcast. As you know, we've had some changes lately, but, jump back in anytime you feel like it.
I'll definitely.
Nobody can get Peggy's ass in gear.
I was about to say, I don't think that's possible.
We've got to do something. Tell him to get the helmet back on.
Well, see, we never should have let him. We never should have let him take the helmet off. That's how we did the mind control.
True. Anyway, I'll catch up with you fellas later. Have a good one, yeah?
Oh, I see Joe's back. You guys were just talking about him a minute. I thought maybe Joe caught the train he was waiting for.
I don't know. I hadn't heard him about 20 minutes.
I'm back at home, but my wife is asleep.
Yeah, don't risk waking her up on our account. It's not worth it.
I put a little message in the chat there.
I got nothing.
It was about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I just read it. I'm just waiting for the time to come here. I think we got 23 minutes.
I was going to say, though, that you guys are talking about Debian, and presumably you have spoken about this, and I don't want to go into it too much, but I think that we need to mark the passing of Ian Murdoch tonight. It was only a couple of days ago, and what actually happened doesn't really matter, but the fact that of what he did with Debian and the fact that he's no longer with us, I think it deserves to be acknowledged.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
Did that come up earlier when I was away from the keyboard?
Yeah, it was. I think guys were just generally talking about 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time early this morning. There was only a couple of guys on. They just happened to mention and basically some of the tweets, and it was just a general discussion.
I must have missed some major Linux news because I haven't really been looking at it the last 2-3 days.
Well, Ian Murdoch committed suicide Monday evening.
Has it come out that they said he committed suicide?
That's what all the news sources are saying at this point.
I don't think it's official, but if you look at his Twitter profile, well, that's now been deleted, but if you looked over the last few days, he was talking about that he was going to do it, and he had some police brutality, and so it seems fairly clear to me, at least, that that's what happened, unfortunately.
It is admittedly slightly suspicious, though, but yeah, either way, it's not cool.
I'm looking at the article on The Guardian. I don't think they haven't said a cause, just said a tribute.
Well, the thing is that despite the fact that this time of year for me is the best time at all of year, because I have a lot of time off work, I can concentrate on the projects that I want to do, and I can relax and have a few drinks and do what I want. But for an awful lot of people, this is a very stressful time of year, and it's a time that suicides and depression really hit a peak. And it seems that it combined that with potentially some police brutality that may have pushed Ian over the edge. And it's incredibly sad that he took a permanent solution to what was potentially a temporary problem.
Yeah, I think it is tragic. And, you know, recently the FCC has underestimated the power of this community when they wanted to regulate routers and potentially general computing devices. I think within the community, we had a great deal of uproar a couple years ago with Aaron Schwartz. And if it looks like this is a case of, you know, some trumped up charges that he was facing, I think it may be possible that the police involved have way underestimated the community they've perhaps taken on. I don't want to necessarily say we want to go adversarial on this, but I definitely think we want to go investigative and find as much out as possible.
I am in complete agreement with that.
I agree also, but you know how things go. We all have good intentions, but the government is the government. I really don't see beating the government at their own game.
Right, so check out the paste ban I dropped into the chat right there. That's the tweets in question.
I really didn't want to try and drag all of this stuff up and stuff. For me, mentioning Ian was more of a, how can I put it? Just let's remember the great work that he did and mourn his passing. But I think it's too early to start trying to dig over all the details and wonder exactly what happened. For me, it's just, you know, let's remember him and let that be enough for now.
Well, I mean, his contribution cannot be underestimated, because you could say, you know, maybe not fully half, but there are. You know, most distributions out there are either branched from Debian or from Red Hat, and, you know, with a smattering of independence. And it would not be wrong to say that half the distros we use, or nearly half, come from Ian Murdoch's contribution.
I agree. Everything I use is Debian derivative.
I use Debian derivative probably about a quarter of the time these days.
I'm using Bundler at the moment, only because doing a lot of other stuff on this year in a way, and haven't quite set this computer up how I want it. That's also to do with the UEFI to some extent, because annoyingly I can't get it to boot up quite how I want it to, with it coming up first with Grub. And also, if I wanted to reinstall Windows 10 or whatever, and I don't even have installed media, just haven't even bothered to do much with this computer. And although I will add something else here, this is actually a HP computer, so you'd think, oh, well, that's a band, it's supposed to be kind of good. But actually, a lot of the time it comes up saying it overheats when it goes into suspend or hibernation mode. It comes up with a screen saying that it's basically gone to thermal shutdown, that it's okay now, and that's not very good, is it? For a computer that's worth quite a lot of money, or supposed to be.
Well, I've actually just decided I'm just going to install Debian and run that for the next week. I mean, that's probably about the best tribute I can do.
To me, the best tribute is to use Ubuntu or even Linux Mint, because the legacy is really the most important thing to me, and that Debian in of itself is a powerful operating system, but the things that Canonical have done and Clem has done with Linux Mint and the countless other derivatives are testament to how rock solid Debian is, and all the work that Ian put into that to found it, you know, that to me it's about the legacy. And it's fair enough, you can run straight Debian as a tribute, but even running something like a Linux Mint Cinnamon desktop to me is enough, because that says, you know, that really pays tribute to the work that Debian has done over the past 20 odd years.
How do you get that Debian t-shirt, logo t-shirt from Fosden upstairs somewhere? So yeah, I should find that. I wonder where that t-shirt is now, actually, thinking of it. But yeah, I agree with 5150's comment that about half the distros that are commonly used are going to be either based on Red Hat in some way or the other, or Debian.
Well, you have the SUSE side of things, but I mean, unless you're German.
Yeah, but SUSE as well is, as its links to Red Hat, as does Mageo and Mandriva. Well, Mandriva doesn't really exist as a distro anymore, but there's the RPM distro, there is a link to Red Hat in that sense. So yeah, about half the distros are going to have a link to Debian somewhere or the other, or Red Hat, which was 5150's comment. Then we've got, of course, some other distros like Gentoo and all that are different.
Not to mention Solus OS.
Or Unnatural.
Either way you slice it, the Linux community owes a great tribute to the guy.
Definitely, but I think that dwelling on him and his life is probably not what he would have wanted. And to try and progress things and continue with Debian derivatives, and indeed things like Solus OS, is probably the best tribute that we can give to Ian, that things continue and the work that he did to bring people into the Linux world. I mean, I wouldn't be talking to you guys now if it wasn't for Debian, but that's not to say that we have to dwell and get depressed about it. You know, things move forward, and that's probably what he would have wanted.
Yeah, because of Ubuntu, I think, you know, it's probably, what, we're 70% of people get into Linux starting with Ubuntu, so even if you say things are split down right down the middle between Debian and the RPM distros, I mean, still counting the independent Slackware and etc. No, Ubuntu is was the gateway distro for most of us. Certainly was for me. So yeah, without Ian, there would be no Ubuntu. Now, am I wrong in saying that Ian was no longer day-to-day involved in development?
Right. He was working with Docker right now. I think he gave up day-to-day development for Debian in 96 or so.
I just want to say here, to go 5150 a little bit here. Yeah, the thing is, if there had been Debian or Ubuntu or whatever, there would have been something else. And if we go back to the 90s, for example, then a lot of people actually had their first introduction to Linux using Mandrake, which later became Mandriva. So, you know, there would always been something else, if basically.
Well, that reminds me.
My first distro was Mandrake, and I was on dial-up, and I couldn't really, once I got installed, I couldn't do a thing with it. Because of the speed of my connection, but yeah, you're right. But my second introduction into Linux was definitely with Ubuntu, and I think their efforts to try to make it as dead simple as possible, as much as I question a lot of Canonical's decisions lately. I don't think anybody can question the contribution that Ubuntu has made to getting people into Linux.
Yeah, but to go, I was another point now. User friendly, so this is a bit debatable. But if you go to, as I did, Ubuntu is so user friendly, but. I that's not quite true, actually, compared to certain other distributions, because there's, for example, the control center in Mandriva, Magia, PC Linux OS, even anything in that kind of family. And then OpenSUSE has got Yast, which is supposed to be quite good as well. Welcome screens in East Mandriva and Mint has that. So. And that lacks in Ubuntu. There's some things that are lacking that kind of should be there in the way, but aren't. And that's one example, I would say.
Now, that's one thing, and I think I would be against Aiki, you know, Solus, they're trying to make it a distribution where the average user never has to see the command line. And every Linux distro I've ever installed, package management is just so much better from the command line than using a graphical tool. So that, at least in my opinion. So when you talk about Yast, yeah, Yast is a nice tool. It's a nice tool if you want a web-based package management solution. But you know, give me Zyper any day over Yast.
Something that
Solus uses, is that what you're saying? Well, I was just going to say there that you talk about not needing to go to the command line, and Linux Mint, to me, specifically the Cinnamon version and to some extent the Mate version, that is a distribution where the average user who has never used Linux before, and if you set that up for them and sit them in front of it, teach them they need to do their updates, this is where you get new software. That's all you need to do. I honestly believe that with Linux Mint, you don't ever need to go to the command line. And indeed, Ubuntu, the main Unity version, as much as I despise Unity as a user interface, I think that someone who is new to it would never need to drop to the command line. I would, as a matter of course, because it's quicker to do things like an apt-get update and dist upgrade. But if you've never used the command line before, I don't think you need to do it. And whereas with other distributions, you do necessarily need to do that. I think that's what Ubuntu and derivatives like Linux Mint have, that's how they've progressed things.
Yeah, but in a way, however, even things like Linspire and Sandros in the older days, they were doing user-friendly before even Canonical or something like that even did it, really. Dreamer Ubuntu just was a Gnome 2 distribution anyways, did Gnome 2 and that was about it really, based on Debian. But with your point of distributions that you don't need to go to the command line, well, that really applies to most distributions today, the last many years even, with the exception of distributions, that's of course Arch Linux and Gentoo are default, and Slackware and distributions that are generally seen as being for more technical people. But everything else, pretty much everything else, you haven't really needed to go on the command line for most things for years now. And that is also quite simply because of upstream projects mostly as well, because they all run the same thing.
Yeah, but look at Fedora, where, okay, you can install it and use it for a web browser, but that's about it. If you want to have any media playback or flash or anything like that, then you need to drop to the command line to add the various repositories that you need to install that non-free stuff and the trademark encumbered stuff. So, you know, Fedora to me is the main alternative to the Ubuntu based ones, apart from Gentoo and Arch, which are more for the advanced user. But for me, and even SUSE as well, that's, I don't think that the average person can use that without a little bit of command line, even if it's just copy pasting blindly.
Pokey and yeah, I sound terrible apparently because I'm using the. Couldn't find my headset actually. I was looking for it earlier. So I'd listened to the recording of me speaking. I was like, oh. Which I'm using an internal microphone in the laptop, which is not the best.
I've got an internal mic too, and it's not great, but it's not so over modulated. It's like your levels are way too high, or you got mic boost on or something. But I don't mean to distract from the. From the conversation, sorry.
Well, yeah, I was wondering if I could, but I already tried like reducing the volume on it and things like that.
It wasn't a judgment call either. I was just trying to type it in the chat in case you didn't know.
Yeah, we had some people who weren't happy with that, so that's what I thought I'd say. We got probably about 5 people who were really not happy with it.
Well, in Seb's defense, when he came on, he asked how he sounded, and we said, well, you know, it's maybe a little distorted in feedback, but it's listenable, probably won't detract from the show, and it's kind of gone back and forth, Pokey, but generally his audio has been at least tolerable through the show.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.